Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Moana.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Casey Patterson.
The story in real time.
We're a much better team now than we were then.
I'm not looking at just this season. I'm looking at the next 4 years.
You're listening to The Net Live with Barney.
You didn't win, so you must not have done a good job.
And DJ Ruscha.
I have great thighs.
It's The Net Live right now.
Right on, Casey Patterson. They keep it rolling. He's booming all over the world, man.
He had a good weekend.
He did. Another good weekend, we should say. We should point out. It's
yeah,
not just a
you're
good
right.
weekend with Casey Patterson this year. It is a lot of good weekends. Another good weekend. And this is another good week to be a part of the Net Live. Maybe one of the best, Jeremy. We'll see at the end of our show
how the fans feel about it.
If it was one of the best weekends to be a part of the Net Live. I think it's possible. Great show planned for you today. We have a surprise guest host who is currently in traffic on the 405.
Happens Mondays.
On his way down, he will be
no,
here.
No, we're letting
shortly.
People know it's a he now.
It is a he.
Okay.
It is a he. Although we are in the market for a quality, opinionated female host.
And we have some ideas.
We do. But we are in the market for that. If you have any suggestions, email us, thenetlive@gmail.com, or hit us up on Facebook and tell us who you want to hear on our air as a guest host, either on a guest basis or on a permanent or semi-permanent basis. We are definitely in the market to have a female voice and increased female opinion here on the program to counteract the misogynistic male tendencies of us.
Speaking of which, I saw Kelly Tennant yesterday.
No, you did.
She was at the event, Steve Nash Foundation event that Geeter and I were both at.
Oh, Kelly's there. Geeter's there.
Well, it's
nice.
It's kind of a big deal.
Nice. This is a celebrity basketball tournament?
Soccer. The Steve Nash Foundation.
He's a big soccer
guy. Yeah, soccer stuff. They had, some LA Galaxy guys out there, some basketball guys. My Los Angeles Clipper, Jared Dudley, now was out there, scored a goal.
Nice.
Good times.
Nice. Good stuff. Well, we have a great show planned for today. In addition to the guest host, we will have Jane Collymore, former University of Florida Gator.
I'm excited about that.
Who will come on and talk to Jeremy about music. And
yeah, you
will,
just get to like tune out at that point?
Yeah, or? I handle all these other interviews. You're going to handle Jane Collymore and the music side of things. You guys are just going to geek out. We're going to learn stuff about the music business we did not
know. I don't know if it's going to be a good interview. It'll just be me talking to her.
It's okay. It's okay. You guys going off. She knows Sir Mix-a-Lot and Bone Thugs and Harmony. So we can start with that.
Those are going to be good questions.
We'll have a lot of audio from the women's matches, or from one of the women's matches. Jeremy and I repped the Net Live on Friday night down in Long Beach. Matt Gardhoff repped the Triangle Hat.
He repped hard.
As well as himself and the event. He did a great job, but it was a really impressive event. We'll talk about that. Coach's Corner, we'll have LMU and national team coach Tom Black. He's an assistant for Karch on the national team. He is the head over there at Loyola Marymount University, right near Los Angeles International Airport. We'll have Tom Black on Coach's Corner talking about the difference between international and collegiate coaching, international and collegiate players, and what he is taking back to his college program from his international experience, as this is the first year he has been a coach there. There's a lot happening in the world of volleyball. Of course, Stad this past weekend happened. We'll get to that for beach volleyball. But I want to start with the USA Cup because it was held here locally in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
It was the United States women facing off against Japan. And you may say, oh, Japan is it Japan. Japan is the bronze medalist, by the way. This is a
rematch. Just in case anybody's wondering, yeah.
This is a matchup of the silver medalist and bronze medalist from last year's Olympic Games and put on three really nice matches. The United States actually swept the series 3-1, 3-1, and 3-2. But it was not without some fantastic play on both sides. And let's just put it out there right now. Bravo, Southern California.
Oh, we good, talk. Go ahead.
Good for you guys.
Yeah.
We beat you up last year in preparation for the men's Olympic qualifier, also held at the Pyramid, and you showed up in force. And again, you showed up in force for three matches all throughout the Southern California area for the USA women. Bravo.
When you and I walked into the Pyramid, I feel like we both walked in and kind of stopped and were in shock and awe that it was sold out.
Yes, it
and
was
not
like
because
Black Hawk helicopters coming down
yes.
on us,
and not because it couldn't have been sold out. But for me, and I'm in the world of volleyball, I didn't know about it until we talked about it on the show last Monday.
Okay,
I didn't realize that they were at the Pyramid, so I was like, okay, maybe word didn't get out there as much. Walked in the door, sold out.
It was great.
It was awesome.
And they actually turned people away two nights before that. I believe it was Capistrano. No, it was REMAC down there in
San Diego
right, yep. on the campus of UC San Diego. They turned away 200 to 300 people. They could not put them in the building. That may have never happened in the last 15 years or 20 years here in the United States.
And let's, you know, give a round of applause to all of the fans.
There you go.
Our in-studio audience. For showing up. I mean, and like you and I commented while we were there, it didn't look like even the normal volleyball crowd. Like, I didn't see a lot of people that I recognized, so that means they've reached new people somehow to get to these events.
The fewer people I know at these events, the better the marketing turned out. Bottom
yeah,
line.
Oh yeah.
Bottom line.
For sure.
Because if I know everybody there, it's the same old suspects
yeah.
who are going to die in those seats one day, that's no good.
Die in those seats.
But
I don't know if I would have gone that far.
This was new fans. This was great stuff. And fortunately, they got to see some really nice performances by a variety of players. 17 different U.S. players in the three-match series for the World Cup. Or what are they calling this? The Volleyball Cup. USA Volleyball Cup with Japan. So 17 players got to see action. Actually, Jenna Haglund and Courtney Thompson set the last match.
Yep.
That's two University of Washington setters.
Mm-hmm.
Nice job up there. Kirsty Jackson and Sonia Newcomb suited for their first international matches. So you're seeing some new players, some new faces and talent. We actually have some good audio from that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, we do.
And speaking of new faces, how about a familiar face? Danielle Scott-Ahuda.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, Danielle Scott now.
Danielle Scott, yes. Who I think you called like 85 in your interview that I listened to.
57, maybe.
57?
Yeah, let's
kind of harsh.
Let's play that video or that audio. This is her right after the match. Opportunity to hear from an Olympic veteran.
All right, here after USA versus Japan, a U.S. victory here with Danielle Scott. Actually, Danielle, you're what, 57 years old now in your 10th Olympics?
Something like that. But it feels like I'm 20 in my first. I don't know. I'm just having fun with it. I feel healthy. I enjoy being with the girls, and it's a lot of fun. It's really nice to compete.
Yeah, how is it you can stay healthy? Because I'm all beat up and messed up, and here you are still playing.
I was just commenting on how great a shape you're in. Well, I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of downtime. I think that's the key once you're older, but I'm really blessed physically, and I haven't had any major injuries, and I don't know, passionate about doing it. If I am injured, I'm going to limp through it.
Well, this is a fun match tonight. Great U.S. crowd. You're not used to seeing this in the U.S. How fun is it to play in front of so many people?
That was so awesome, and to be back here in the Pyramid. I saw that the Pyramid or Long Beach had hosted the men's championship last year. I was like, this is awesome. That'd be great to get a women's match here. And so here we are against Japan. It's sold out. Oh, I don't know if it's sold out, but it was pretty full. The atmosphere was great, and it's so wonderful, yeah.
Was the Pyramid here, or were you gold mine when you were here?
I was gold mine, and even the alumni game last year was at the gold mine because they were reforming things here. But, yeah, it was nice playing the gold mine or in the Pyramid here and be back at home.
Okay, I know we got a ton of fans here, but I want to get first just your thoughts on Karch Karai and the first beginning of his system, because this is kind of the first view for everyone to see a Karch Karai coach team. What's different about the gym?
I think there is a sense of calm that he's trying to emphasize, that everything is important, not just your finals. And so when you get to the gold medal match, like this is our 11th championship match, so that once we get to the gold medal match, hopefully, you know, we'll do everything the same. Don't try to do too much or anything less. Just play volleyball. So that's one thing. And also just commitment to each other, which we've had in the past, but like commitment to going for every ball and for talking about things, try to do things, talk about things beforehand, and like the emphasis on that. But yeah, he's been great.
Okay, we got to get you on the show for a longer interview. I had too many people standing around here want to get your autograph, but thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Danielle.
All right, Danielle Scott.
Yep.
I don't think she's 57.
She's not even close to 57.
She's like 40, though. I'd have to look up Danielle Scott's actual age.
She played pretty well. Got in the game.
She did.
Yep.
And she played well the next night. Let's hear from Kristen Richards-Hildebrandt. Kristen Hildebrandt. Called her Kristen Jackson at one point. No, she is not the star of Twilight.
She would like to be.
Yeah, it would work out okay. But let's hear from one of the young players, Kristen Hildebrandt, who I think is going to have a good year.
You don't go with the Richards or do?
No, I'm Hildebrand now.
Thank you for doing that, by the way, because it doesn't fit on a jersey, and it's terrible to have to say. Hey, congratulations on a good match. What are your thoughts on kind of first time out?
Gosh, I mean, Japan brought a great game of volleyball tonight, like they always do. They were kind of relentless on defense. It got pretty tough to kill a ball. It was three, four, five, even six rallies sometimes transitioning back and forth. I don't know. There were some tough moments for USA tonight. Got down pretty good at times. I felt like in the second set we did something pretty cool by being down 17-23 and coming back and winning. I was really proud of our effort for that. And all in all, like, pretty happy.
What happened in set number 3? Because you had all that momentum coming out of set 2 with the big comeback.
I don't know. Service D kind of broke down a little bit. I don't know. Japan's a tough team, you know, and they get a lot of momentum. We couldn't find the groove.
You look like a different player than just a couple of years ago. Do you feel like a different player? I mean, you look stronger. You look more like a professional volleyball player, and you just look more dynamic out there. Do you feel that way?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
What do you credit that to?
Bunch of hard work, I suppose.
Overseas, here with the U.S. team, both?
Yeah, a combination of both. Absolutely, yeah.
Where have you been playing?
I've been playing in Italy. I've been playing in Turkey. I've been playing in Russia. Going to Brazil next year. And then, you know, every summer coming back and grinding with USA is a lot of opportunities to get better. So.
Yeah, you're just surfing the world. You haven't stayed in one team for more than 1 year?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Every year I've had the opportunity to go back to that team, but I've had better offers and more enticing offers. Like after I played in Azerbaijan, they wanted me to go back, and I had a much better offer in Italy, and I always wanted to play in Italy. And my year in Italy, I didn't stay because the economy kind of broke down. And Istanbul, I mean,
did they pay you?
No.
No.
They sure didn't.
A typical story.
Yeah. But and the same thing kind of happened with Italy. I had to get out of there because the economy was bad, so I went to Turkey, and this year Turkey, you know, they offered me, but I got a much better offer in Brazil, so yeah, surfing the world, like you said.
When you're playing overseas, is it the coaching that's been making you better, or the players that are around you, or stuff you're doing internally? Where do you think you're getting the most benefit when you're not with the U.S. national team?
Stuff I'm doing internally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the USA program, Karch, he sends us over with, I mean, we know what we're doing, we know what we're training, and we know our system, and I mean, it's definitely a challenge going over and I don't know, integrating into a bunch of Turkish volleyball players, right? A lot of them can't communicate. Service lanes are different, or the blocking system is different. So it's definitely a challenge. But I don't know, Karch does a great job of checking in with us often to make sure that we're working on the right things, and you know, sending video back and forth and just staying engaged. So it's I don't know. I mean, it's definitely got to put a lot of effort into it. But yeah, we're all getting better.
Okay, your husband Tyler is now coaching with Casey and Jake, who are having a great year.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But when you guys are at home, how much volleyball gets talked about?
Oh, God. Well, if it's up to Tyler, quite a lot.
Okay.
The guy can talk for hours about the game. I tend to kind of shut it off and just kind of want to, you know, keep volleyball at the ASC if I'm doing it 6, 7, 8 hours a day.
Have you had to tell him, like, stop?
Well, I mean, it gets to a point after about 10 or 15 minutes, you know, he can see it on my face. I'm hanging in there with him, and then he kind of is like, all right, I know, I'm talking too much. And then he kind of, you know, whatever, wraps it up. So, yeah.
All right, you're my pick this year to have a breakout year. Is that going to happen?
Yes, sir.
Right on. All right, thanks for the time.
Thanks.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Sorry, I got another friend named Kristen.
No.
I want to be there for a Hildebrand dinner. One time. I want to hear it.
Did the talk volley? Or?
Yeah, when her eyes glaze over, she's like, dude, I've been in practice 6 hours today. I don't want to hear about it anymore. Hey, our guest host has arrived. You might know this person. He's an author, a clothing company owner, member of the board of Big Brothers of America at one point, a Catholic Youth Organization Hall of Fame member, a commercial actor, a movie actor, a father, a TV commentator, and a partner in a sandal company, Christopher St. John Smith. Welcome, Chris.
Nobody knows who you're talking about.
That was the point. No, of course, this is Sijin Smith. I think he has, a couple of tour victories, Hall of Fame member 2000. Everybody knows that stuff. This is the more fun stuff.
They don't know the Christopher part?
That's right. Nobody does. In fact, when they called me Christopher in high school, I didn't respond because I didn't know who they were talking to.
So where did the Sijin come from?
Old English pronunciation of St. John. That's my middle name.
Really?
Yeah. One of Shakespeare's characters in one of his plays was St. John. And my dad liked it, so.
Okay, so but he named you Christopher St. John, but intended to go with the St. John the whole time.
I grew up as St. John, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, hey, thanks for coming down to the studio here.
Sure. It's been a long time. I've been waiting for you guys to invite me down.
I loved your answer. I worked with him on the CIF championships here on Fox, and I said, Dave, would you come down to the studio sometime? All you have to do is ask.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's been waiting by his phone for years for a phone call, Kevin. Jeez.
Finally. Hey, so we were chatting off while we were listening to those interviews and talking about the crowds here in Southern California. We were just kind of congratulating before you walked in Southern California for actually showing up. Are you surprised that they sold out the men's event last year and the women's event? Two of them were completely sold out, and Long Beach was darn near sold out again.
Well, the crazy thing is we have such tremendous players. There's, you know, and the matches are great matches. It's just a matter of how do you get the people there. And for whatever reason, the public now wants to see our national teams compete. So that's an unbelievable thing. But you said it's very expensive to bring those matches here. So, I don't know what they're going to do. But the more those matches we can have, the better it is for the sport in our country. And the sport of volleyball really needs a boost.
Yeah, you said, why don't they play here more often if it's been that successful? My answer was, well, it's hard because Grand Prix, which is their big World League event, their long, month-long event that they play all these international matches and have to be a part of because all the good teams mm-hmm. are in that tournament and in those matches, that's all in Asia. And to bring an event here or a week here is going to be an untold amount of money.
Well, and how many people actually do they get when they go to Asia? Do they get quite a few?
It varies. Yeah. It's like World League or it's like World Cup or World Championships in Japan. Yeah. Sometimes the crowd is really good. Sometimes there's 25 people there.
But they get tremendous television coverage and everything else, and that's what pays for them to be there. So it is harder to be here, but God, if you can get 5,000 people or more to watch a match, it's got to be worthwhile to bring it here.
Yeah, Lumina Sports Marketing Group, who just signed a deal with USA Volleyball, was the party responsible for this. I know they were pleasantly I think pleasantly surprised because leading into it, I had some communication with them, and they didn't have great pre-sales
mm-hmm.
because it's always been a walk-up market.
Yep.
You always knew you could get a ticket. It's not like it's going to sell out. Well,
now
you may have gotten turned away at REMAC. They turned away a few hundred people who said, I'm here for the volleyball. Sorry,
sold bro.
Out.
Sorry, bro.
That's a great thing for the sport, for sure.
And after they staggered backwards and tried to decide if they were dreaming or having a nightmare. Really? Sold out?
Love it.
So, St. John, I was going through your bio here, just kind of reading about you and this and that and the other thing, and I wondered if back in the day your partnership was so close, could that have made a reality show? If this was today, if it was you guys today, AVP and beach volleyball was as big as it was and we're in this reality environment, would you guys have made a good subject for a reality show?
I think
with Stokos himself
trying to step back. And
would you
look
wanted
at it,
that? Is the question.
Well, that's a different story.
A different issue, right? I just mean from a viewership standpoint.
Okay, gotcha.
It makes it much harder. But it wasn't just about me and Randy or Randy, individually. It was the group of people that were playing at that time. Hovland and Dodd. You couldn't do anything fun without having them involved, and particularly Hovland. I mean, we. When we left California to build the sport around the country, it was really Randy, me, Hov, and Dodd. And we would go to these cities in advance, and we'd go to the bars, and we might have a beer or two, or three, But it made for some very interesting entertainment, for us for sure, but for the people around us too. And then the competition really is what made it great because we were always battling against them in the finals. And Hovland was a tremendous character in our sport.
He is.
Still to this day.
We had him a couple of years ago with some of the funniest radio we've ever had, I think.
Yeah, and Randy, too. And then the interaction between all of us, it made for, that's the only reason why I was able to play for 25 years. It was so much fun and so interesting, having those personalities in the game, playing against them and working with them to build the sport and everything. It was awesome.
Now, Canyon Seaman works for WWE now, former volleyball athlete who now is in charge of casting new talent for WWE. It seems like the AVP in that day had more of a WWE component to it. Not that it was staged, but that you had actual characters there were sort of the good guys and the villains, and there were sort of the middle-of-the-road guys that would come in and come out, and there, it was more characterized than today. At least it seemed that way.
It was all timing. It all happened at the right time with the right
lightning
people.
In a bottle?
Yeah, and all throughout the 80s and the early 90s, the right people with the personalities who were there, and it just made for great entertainment, not only on the court but on television and off the court, the whole thing. And then there's stories about fighting and the South Bay and the North Bay and the whole thing.
16th Street versus Marine.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. But to me, the South Bay was all one group. And I think
and Will Rogers was another?
Well,
State Beach?
Anything outside of South Bay. But when we would come down and we'd play at Manhattan or Hermosa, there seemed to be a quite a large faction that was really pulling for the Manhattan guys, particularly Hovland and Dodd.
Yeah.
Hovland and Dodd. And it made it interesting for them, made it interesting for us, and it was great for the crowd.
I know we're going to skip around a little bit with you here for the entire show from the Wayback Machine to today. And one of the things that I find interesting about you is how you've stayed involved in a lot of different ways. One of those ways is you're now an owner or president of the Collegiate Sand Volleyball Championships.
Yeah, I actually started that. And what, when the NCAA started to show interest in the sport, I thought, oh, this is fantastic, unbelievable. But there was a huge component missing, and that is
a championship.
Well, that is most of the schools in the country. Mm-hmm. And the kids, that want to play that will never be able to participate in the NCAA program, particularly the guys, but also many, many, many girls' schools and many girls that just won't participate in the NCAA program because there's only going to be a handful of schools that are going to be able to participate. So I saw a big void, so I went, okay, let's just start having events for all those other kids in all the schools around the country. Set it up so we'd have qualifiers around the country and then a championship out here in California. And I've done that for the last 7 years, and we'll talk about this later, I'm sure, but the championships this year is part of the ASICS World Series of Beach Volleyball event, where, with the Grand Slam and the World Series Cup Final and the six-man and the four-man and the youth, and then part of it will be our championship.
This is the club side of things for the kids. They're participating on their own, funding their own way.
Yeah, it's all about it's basically creating a culture within the college ranks for sand volleyball that is not there at all. Getting them to know that there's an opportunity to play and compete against other athletes from other colleges. And so within the college, they're going to compete, and then an opportunity to go out and compete against other colleges is kind of an interesting thing. At least I think so. I would have loved to have done it when I was in college, but that wasn't available. But so, yeah, just creating and developing a culture of the sport, and that's going to help the sport in general competing internationally, because you're going to start to see some of our good athletes coming out of these programs that are going to represent us around the world.
Yeah, the future of beach volleyball in the United States seems very much in doubt when this current generation leaves.
Yeah.
When the Todd Rogers, Phil Dalhauser, Misty and Carrie, when those athletes are gone, and even you look at April and Jen, and now it's going to be April and Carrie, but that whole group of athletes, it looks like there's going to be a whole shift in the way that it functions, in the way that the athletes relate to the national governing body in the international game.
Well, you mean just losing those players, those named players?
Well, losing the named players is one thing.
Yeah.
But also the way that the talent is developed. Because those players develop themselves, or so they would have you believe. I mean, with the help of the AVP and the help of the FIVB and that system as it was, where you decided to play in these events, you worked out every day on the beach, set your own schedule, got your own coach, everything else. Now there seems to be a fundamental shift to more of a national team model, and not quite the Brazilian model that we're seeing implemented this year, where the coaches are chosen, the training site is chosen, the players and the partnerships are chosen by the organization. But we're starting to see it brought more into and integrated with the governing body, where before it was very much outside.
Well, yeah, and that is the attempt by the national governing body, and they will continue to try and build their development part of the game. But with a country this large, most of the development's going to be done outside of the national governing body. I mean, in any way that they can bring in all the different factions that are doing anything for the sport under the umbrella is going to be great, and that, I think, is what they're striving for, and I'll help them do that as well. But the reality is there's so many people out there that don't really need the national governing body at this point. they have their areas around the country where they're putting on, you know, all different kinds of events at all different levels, and they're very successful at it.
There's operators, you're talking about,
yeah,
not players.
Yeah, promoters.
Promoters yeah.
Of the game. And, you know, in Chicago, in New York, I mean, everywhere, in all up and down Florida, there's people putting on events at all different levels, and people are playing. And that's continuing to grow and grow and grow. So, and even on, at the youth level, the club volleyball indoors, there's so many players being developed at that level. And now beach is becoming a part of that.
That club system, right.
Yeah, and that doesn't really have anything to do with the NGB. So, yeah, the national governing body is playing a bigger role. They need to play an even bigger role, and they will going into the future. It's going to take many, many years. But you cannot discount what's happening in those pockets around the country that are developing players, developing events, and really helping grow the sport.
You mentioned the factionalization or the splinter grouping,
right? I'm not
sure
if that was the right word. I didn't mean it as a negative, but the reality is, you know, the guys in Chicago that are putting on the events, they're all by themselves. There's nobody out there helping them. And then there's, you know, a group in Milwaukee, completely separate of the guys in Chicago. They're doing what they do. They're successful at what they do. And now, bit by bit, they're trying to work together in some way because, you know, there's not enough out there for at least the higher level players to make a living. So they've got to crisscross to all these different areas to try and make a little bit of money if they want to continue to play the sport and develop at the highest level.
I can see it kind of two ways, where the factionalization and people going their own directions would help to develop and perhaps find the right path to promote the sport. But I can also see it being too many people going too many different directions, and there's no sense of community and sense of all boats rise with the tide kind of situation. Which do you think is better? Are we in the middle of trying to sort out how it all is going to relate? I mean, you're always in the middle of something developing, I guess, but it seems like this has been a big sea of change since 2010, where the main entity disappeared again.
Well,
the ABP.
The main entity had nothing to do with any of these other promoters across the country.
Right.
You know, the ABP was at that time the sport at the highest level, and it really only catered to the professionals and, you know, what, 30 teams maybe around the country, mostly in Southern California. So they had nothing to do with the development of the sport. And they tried to bring in these promoters around the country, have them do qualifiers for the AVP, but, you know, they really weren't offering that much, enough to make these promoters, you know, drop everything and become part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, they're out there, they're doing their thing, they're successful already.
They have some other areas which they're drawing, the youth and the community programming you're talking
all
about.
All the different levels,
yeah.
The amateur level and everything else, and actually the pro level isn't their biggest deal, but each one of these groups around the country will do a pro event and offer, you know, some kind of prize money. Not at the highest level, not enough to, you know, make a living off of for the players, but something that's interesting to get attention, to get more sponsors at a certain level, and even maybe some coverage on the web or somewhere.
All right, well, there's a lot of different directions we're going to go here with Sinjin today as he sits in on this episode of the Net Live, but we have our guest coming up next. We're going to take a short break and give you a little taste of who's coming up. She's been on the show a few years ago, and she can still be seen all around the Seattle, Washington area, as well as with Sir Mix-a-Lot once in a while.
I can't wait to ask her about that.
Question number one, right off the bat.
Right off the bat.
Sir Mix-a-Lot, talk about it.
Yes, and go. We'll be right back.
Volleyball Magazine, the only print publication covering all aspects of the sport you love. VBM has been publishing the latest in volleyball news for over 35 years. With exclusive photo galleries, player interviews, event coverage, product reviews, and volleyball-specific health and fitness advice, Volleyball Magazine is a great resource for players and fans of all levels. Now, with an even more robust online presence, check out volleyballmag.com to subscribe and find exclusive web content and articles. Also on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, Volleyball Mag is the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Push the four in place. Hold my yourself up by my bootstraps. I felt it on your face, it stepped on something healthy and immeasurable, potentially pleasurable, yeah. You got a thing for cats, baby, I am quite the felon. Out of the laundromat, trapped your store, got breathing pages far behind me. There you can find me, oh no. And I can tell that you're into me, and I'm digging on you. There's something that they're into, like the rhythm of a drum, like a slow day. You are ready to become someone I want around. Treasure grin that swells. You got stuff together, baby. Your mother taught you well, stable and uniquely funny. Not a curving, I'm so deserving of me. Forecasted, alone but to feel it right. Guard down as my arms extend. For that which I'm ready. Back and then get my feet wet, and you're digging on me. It's in the way that you sit out in your breeze, and the pattern of your legs on the navel's lining in summer and moonshine above.
Welcome back to the Net Live. You're getting a good listen to Jane Collymore, star at University of Florida. Years ago, spent some time with the national team, and now can be seen all around the Seattle area. Has embarked on a rather ambitious musical career, and we played her a few years ago here, and she's done a lot since then, so we thought we'd spend some time catching up with her. Please welcome to the Net Live, for the first time in a long time, Jane Collymore. Jane, are you there?
I am, Kevin. How are you doing?
Hey, we're good here. We're just hanging out, myself, DJ Roche, and St. John Smith co-hosting today. So one thing I found interesting about your site, Jane, we've had you on here before. On your musical website, there is no mention of volleyball. What happened?
Well, you know, I'm done playing for right now. I've done quite a bit of coaching and done some playing, and, just focusing my energies on music.
Okay, but do the two cross-pollinate at all? Is there any way to make music and volleyball play together? You could warm up to your own music, I guess.
There are some possibilities. I actually do have a volleyball song I wrote, kind of a fun gym anthem called Fist Pump Society, play volleyball. Coached some of my own clinics, so... I don't know. What are some of your thoughts, Kevin, on cross-pollination?
Well, people get my thoughts all the time on this show. That's why we bring on guests, so we can hear other things. It's too much of me sometimes.
Well, volleyball didn't hurt Gabby Reese.
Hey, it's your show. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
It's true. Hey, Jeremy, I know you were dying to get to Sir Mix-a-Lot right off the top.
Yeah, Jane, I heard a rumor that you toured with Sir Mix-a-Lot or touring with Sir Mix-a-Lot. I would like to hear more about that.
I opened up for him, did a couple shows in Seattle, and also opened up for the President of the United States of America here in Seattle. So did a little bit of work with them, recorded with Sir Mix-a-Lot. He's very, very funny, very down-to-earth guy, very talented. So they're a pleasure to work with.
Yeah, it seems like the stuff I've seen with him, he seems like a very kind of funny dude when he talks about his biggest hits, and he's just laughing about the whole thing. He seems like a very tongue-in-cheek kind of normal dude. And have you found that people in music, how different are they or how similar are they to people in volleyball?
Well, I guess as a whole, they're both more public professions. So, both groups of people are in the spotlight. And I think people are people. You know, you've got your funny ones, you've got your wild cards, you've got your... Yeah, people are people. They're the same everywhere you go.
Yeah. Jane, I'm always curious about, like,
yeah.
the making of music. Like, I always like watching the behind the scenes and how things came to be. Tell us a little bit about how, like, you got into the music side and actually are now touring. That's not an easy thing to do. People can't just pick up and go, hey, I'm just going to go tour my record.
Yeah. Well, I began music when I was about age 3. I started playing classical piano from ages 3 to 12. Picked up the guitar, started putting old journals and poetry to guitar songs, and it just became this little hobby that I pursued quietly while I was doing volleyball. It gave me a nice sort of counterbalance, and then began recording my own music. And things just kind of snowballed from there. Just started using the social networking platform that I had available and interacting with local bands and labels. And that's it in a nutshell.
Is it easier or harder today in the music environment, do you think, than in the past? It seems like technologically it's easier, but that might make the climate more crowded with artists trying to put out and promote their brands and their music.
You mean to stay independent while using music?
No, to get noticed. To get noticed and get on tour and get your music distributed. Is it easier or harder? Is it harder because it's more crowded? Is it easier because it's technologically possible?
I think it's much easier. I encourage every single musician, artist, you know, who wants to get their stuff out there to stay independent and to just utilize social media and use technology. These days, we really don't need record labels to do anything for us. All you really need to do is put a Facebook profile up. You can utilize a fantastic tool called Reverb Nation that allows you to distribute your music on iTunes and Amazon. Then you just get out there and play. You can network with other local musicians. You can do open mics. If you have access to larger venues, you can do that. You can perform online, YouTube. There's just so many different ways to, retain control and to retain, quality of life while you're pursuing what you love. So, yeah, I'm indie all the way. That's something that majors want me to say, but I'm going to say it.
You're right, though. Like, the major record labels, you don't need them anymore. You really don't.
All right.
I've met with a few of them. I think there's some good things that they can offer in terms of having, you know, the gigantic budgets, but it is a trade-off. I personally enjoy the independent route. I have been signed to a smaller indie label and did get offered some contracts by the majors, and it's just not for me, quite personally. There's some things I won't do for money and to get ahead, and I'm very happy with the decisions I've made. Religious reasons, my music's taken a more Christian, alternative pop soul leaning these days. But, you know, you just got to do what's right.
Yeah, how hard is it to stay committed to that when you are offered opportunities that you don't necessarily think are the right choice? How hard is it for you to remain committed mm-hmm. to what you think is right, not necessarily what might make the most money?
It's all a personal choice. I personally wouldn't be happy with millions and millions of dollars if I was tied down to the wrong people and if I had to jump through different hoops and, kind of play a certain game that I'm not naturally wired to play. So I'm happy taking a little bit less money and living a lifestyle that I am comfortable with. And everyone's different. I've just encountered quite a few individuals and artists at the top who had taken that leap and signed contracts thinking that they were getting into one thing and, you know, wound up being something completely different. No one wants to literally prostitute themselves for success. And it's a business of just a lot of prostitution in that business. No.
I might.
I'm
don't know.
Cool on that, son. Yeah, that's not for me. That's not for me, Kevin. Not for me.
Jane, what is your songwriting process like? Do you need to be sitting in the dark with a bunch of candles lit? Can you do it anywhere? Just any inspiration? Like, what inspires?
Do you have a vision there, Jeremy?
Hey, man, I know a lot of musicians. They need it specific. They need the room temperature at like 72 degrees. I mean, I've met some weird people.
You need 4 Batmans on your desk.
Oh,
I do, yes. But
wow. Who are you talking to, J-Lo?
Well, I said,
yeah, do you need all white M&Ms?
I said artists, not people who have things written for them. Oh, yeah. Cool. Sorry about that, J-Lo.
Yeah. let's see. I just write when inspiration strikes me. I keep a little journal, and I'll put whatever's on my mind in there on a
almost day-to-day basis. And I'll have to pick up my guitar when inspiration strikes. I don't have a set formula. Sometimes it's chord progressions first. Other times it's lyrics first. But no, I don't have a set room temperature that's in due to hits. No, I'm not that specific yet. I don't know if I ought to read. That seems kind of a little bit overboard. How about you? Do you journal? Do you write?
I compose. I do not write lyrics. I have written some songs, and then I go back and look at them, and I'm just like, that's just not good. So I'm in the practicing stage of that, but more composing the music side of it, but not writing.
Hey, I've got a question for you. This is Sinjin.
Okay.
How are you, first of all? You good?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
You're a fantastic
volleyball player.
Oh, well, thank you. So are you. Hey, are you writing? I mean, are you the music you put out? Is it based on a message, or is it just based on what you feel at the time?
That's a very good question. I think it'd be a little bit of both. I tend to draw on personal experiences, different moments of elation and joy, and other times where I want to say something in the real world, but I don't necessarily have the right form for it, so I'll put it into song. I guess when I was a little bit younger, that was my method for communication. It was sort of my form of escape. And then I guess now with, some of the climate change and some of the things kind of going on in politics, I think, like most musicians, we use our art as a form for communication and to make little statements on what we believe. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure. I've got a follow-up, though. because you are a volleyball player, have you, and did you have a desire to take advantage of the volleyball industry to basically, one, just to put out your music and let them hear it, and two, you could make a pretty strong message to the young people in the sport today if you really wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to do that. I spoke a bit with some of the individuals at USA Volleyball a couple years ago, and we'll see. Do you think there's more of a pipeline through you?
Well, I never know. Oh. I mean, it's an interesting concept, and I think you've got a pretty broad audience in the volleyball industry. And the other thing is, you said you wrote something for volleyball. Do we have that here? We don't have it here. It'd be interesting to listen to that. I know that there's a major event that's coming up in the U.S., the Grand Slam, the World Series of Beach Volleyball, with all the top players from around the world. And they were the promoter, Leonard Amato, is going to have a lot of pop music going on throughout the event. But one of the things he was interested in is having some kind of volleyball, for lack of a better word, jingle that he could use to lead – to start every match, to during timeouts or whatever, some kind of music that was kind of upbeat, exciting, but with a volleyball message. And coming from a volleyball person, that would be an ideal situation.
Well, if there's a music festival attached too, how can we have Jean Collymore headlining part of the music festival?
She's touring.
Are you touring in L.A. Next week?
Next week. Yeah.
I have to check the calendar.
This Grand Slam is next week. I actually have a show Friday.
Where?
So it's the following week?
In Seattle, right? Show on Friday. You can fly down, do Saturday here.
There you go.
We'll work on this.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you in touch with the promoter of the event just because he'll be doing more of these events going into the future, and it might be interesting for you just to have the conversation, if nothing else.
Okay, sure.
Jane, we're talking about integrating you into volleyball events here, but how has volleyball and your experience both collegiately and with the national team, how did that influence your musical development or your willingness perhaps to get out there on the ledge and put yourself out there as an artist?
I think sports gave me an incredible amount of self-discipline and structure, which I'm sure it did for every athlete with USA and in college, but it just gives us a huge platform to
move mountains and to make things happen. And whatever we decide to do in life, whether it's art or music or politics or painting sidewalks. So personally, I have to thank all the coaches I've had a pleasure of working with for instilling their different value systems and work ethic that help shape different career ventures. I think just the teamwork aspect, retaining your personal goals and making sure that you still hit team goals. Good times, rock and roll.
All right, Jane, you're going to be appearing at a few venues here coming up. It looks like Coal Creek Chapel on July 19th, City Hall Park on July 28th, and then Trinity Nightclub on September 28th. Mm-hmm. What other regular gigs do you have going in Seattle there in your area?
Right now it's just those three that are lined up. Got a couple invites to play in Los Angeles and still working on some of the logistics there. But for right now, enjoying Washington and kind of enjoying being in one place for more than a 6 months to a year at a time. I'm sure you know how that goes, right?
Oh, we do. We're all too familiar with that. Now, the Seattle scene years ago was a big one musically. I imagine it still is quite vibrant. But I've noticed around the United States that pastels are back. I'm wondering, is flannel back in Seattle? Is that whole thing coming back? Am I having to go grunge again?
Are they going grunge again?
Yeah. Yeah, do I have to break out my flannels that I've hung on to for 15 years?
Kevin, you can wear whatever you'd like up here. Anything that you want. We're not going to put you into a mold. You don't need to go hippie.
All right, I'll try and make sure it's waterproof. I've been to Seattle three or four times in the last year, and I think it's rained every time, but it's always beautiful. And one of the great quotes about Seattle I was ever told was that, yeah, it rains all the time, but people go around pretending like it's not. And I found that to be very true in that great city. Jane, tell people where they can pick up your music if they're interested.
Well, the summers are beautiful here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is nice. Tell people where they can pick up your music if they're interested in getting something of yours off of iTunes or off of Amazon or off of your site. Give us your info here.
Sure. My website is janecollimore.com. That's JaneCollimore. I'm on iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, a couple other sites, and you're welcome to buy my CDs through my store on the website or buy it through internet distribution. I also write and produce, so if you're interested in having some songs written for you or anything produced, feel free to send me an email. I do jingles. I do music licensing. I've done some stuff for independent film, for radio, broadcasting, so you name it. Let me know what you need, and I can hook you up.
All right, St. John Smith appears to be interested.
You, Kevin.
St. John Smith is interested, so you got to make sure you leverage that one. What's your question for me?
Have you been following the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman case?
Uh-oh. We have. I have.
Yeah, we have.
We haven't been stepping into too many political topics around here at the Net Live.
And stayed off the 10 freeway.
Yeah.
What do you think about that case ruling?
Oh, man, I think it's got implications that are far beyond anything that this show is qualified to talk about. We'll save it for the Barnett Political Show.
That's great. Okay, very diplomatic.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin.
All right. Hey, Jane, thanks very much for coming
on. Thank you for having me on the show.
We wish you the best of luck, and maybe we'll see you next week at the World Championships or at the World Series Beach Volleyball. Anything's possible.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. Jane Collymore, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
All right, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jane Collymore checking in straight from Seattle. Well, here's a little more Collymore.
Just some more, get a little vibe. Or...
let it roll a little bit. We're going to take about 35, 40 seconds here, and we'll be right back. More St. John Smith here on the Net Live on a Monday.
Dogmatic, do elastic. There's something more for me to find. Do you? way you want to be as long as celebrate the day like it's your job to live your life without fear. To live your life without fear. A
jibber jabber, something to ignore. May it free all my senses and inhibitions for something true.
Welcome back to the Net Live here on a Monday. Thanks to Volleyball Magazine for their support of this show, as well as the ASICS World Series of Beach Volleyball. We appreciate them supporting this program and want you to get out and support that event. Get out to Long Beach and put your feet, put your wallet where your mouth is sometimes and where your ears are every Monday with us here. Get out there and go to a great volleyball event. Thanks to those that showed up for the indoor side of the game this past week for the women. Now get out and show your love for the outdoors.
It's free.
Yeah, the right price.
That's all you need to know.
It's like
free.
This show.
I mean, come on, can you imagine? First of all, you've got all the best players from around the world, right?
The world.
Your Olympians, your everybody who is at the very top of their sport from the various countries coming here, playing in Long Beach. And guess what? You can play two right alongside of them. You could play in the six-man,
and you can drink.
And you can drink.
Because it's Long Beach.
There's a beer garden, Kevin.
There's a beer garden. And there's a bikini contest. There's all kinds of music every day. There's more than 20 hours on NBC. This has never, ever been done.
I think they're up to like 23 at this point. It's a lot.
It's never.
Chris Marlowe is going to, his voice is going to die.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be horrible?
Yes.
Wong will have to carry the show. He's a little younger. The voice might hold out.
Might hold out, yep.
No, but there's been nothing like this in our country ever. And the great thing is it's coming at a perfect time because at the highest level, our sport in this country is kind of in a flux. So this could really, really help our sport in this country. But for the people, the local people, my God. I mean, when I say local, I mean up and down the coast from all over California.
Yeah.
Here's an opportunity to see the very best in the world and play, too. You could go to their website, WSOBV.com. And sign up and play the six-man, the four-man, the collegiate championships, or a youth event.
How come there's no sitting division? I need a sitting
Hard
division.
To sit in the sand, Kevin.
You
Hard to sit in the sand and play volleyball.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
You could sit in you could.
I mean, you
play
can.
In the sand.
Absolutely. You're going to get sand in places you really don't want it.
You know, once it goes there, it just packs in your own.
No,
you're
I beg
fine.
To differ.
cover the Easy Reader this past week. Great picture of Kerry Walsh along with Leonard Armato, the man behind this event and the man behind so much of beach volleyball throughout the years. Sinjin, what is your exact role and how did you get involved?
Well, Leonard, as you mentioned, he's been involved in the sport since it became professional. He made it professional.
Right, day one, the AVP.
He started the AVP. He created an environment where the players could actually make a living at the game. Build it up, develop television relationships, sponsor deals, everything else. So he's been there. He's done all of it. The sport was in a very, very sad way, and he said, I want to do something, but I want to do something very, very different. Hasn't been done before in this country. And his idea was to do USA versus the world, and NBC was all over it. They said, yes, great idea. Let's do that. USA versus the world. So we had conversations. I worked with Leonard to get in touch with the FIVB, had some very good conversations. They were very much on board because the FIVB really needs and wants to create a presence here in the United States. There hasn't been an international beach event for 10 years here, and still people don't know what the FIVB is. They really don't get it.
They're not sure.
No, they have no idea. You say AVP, they go, oh, yeah. You say the NVL, oh, yeah, it's professional beach volleyball. You say FIVB, you go, aren't they the – well, what are they? Right? So it's an opportunity for the FIVB really to expose who they are and what they are, what they mean to the sport of volleyball and beach volleyball. So we had the conversation with FIVB. They were very much on board, and then trying to lay out what this event would look like, you know, I sat down with Leonard and came up with something that's never been done before. That's the highest level beach volleyball. That's the Grand Slam and the World Series Cup, which is USA versus the world. Top USA athletes against the top athletes from around the world. In a face-off at the end of the event on Saturday and Sunday after the Grand Slam finishes. And then, of course, all throughout, on Thursday, they have a youth component. Anybody can sign up for the youth component, the 12s, 14s, 16s, 18s. And then the collegiate championships where I've already qualified teams around the country and are flying them out. And then anyone who wants to sign up in California has an opportunity to do that as long as there's space available. And then the four-man, of course, which is a mixed four-man. You have to have a woman on your team, or you get to have a woman on your team, I should say.
Pick up a setter.
There you go. And then the six-man, which we all know is a crazy fun event. And it's very, very social, but it also can be very, very competitive. Saturday, everybody plays. Sunday, the better teams will come back and play it off. But the interesting thing about the four-man and the six-man, you can pick up international players that are playing in the event from around the world. So you can add international players
nice.
To your team at any point,
nice.
At any point during the competition.
As long as they're entered in the international event, that you can pick them up inside of your four-man or six-man event.
Absolutely. You there's a limit to how many you can take, but you could kind of look around, see who's doing well, and if they finish their play internationally.
You might want to speak German.
Yeah, that would help. And you can pick up that 6'11 guy.
Or you heckle that guy during the tournament so he loses, and you'll be like, oh, sorry for heckling you, bro, but would you like to be on my six-man team?
Well, you need your buddy to heckle him, but he doesn't know that
you're
our buddy, and
that.
Then you pick him up.
There you go.
So what's the layout here? Because I see it's July 22nd to the 28th. This is not just a one-weekend event. This is not happening with just the pro stuff. Everything's getting underway. And go ahead.
The nature of the international events, the Grand Slams, is they start early in the week. They have pool play, and then they get down to the top teams later on in the week. And
right.
then the television matches start first on Thursday and then Friday, you know, with the Grand Slam. And then the Grand Slam finishes on Saturday. And then the World Series Cup starts Saturday and finishes on Sunday.
Okay.
And throughout all of this, of course, are all the amateur volleyball. And anybody can play in that. All they have to do is go and sign up. And like I said, the six-man and four-man, they're such – you've seen them. You've played in them.
I have.
So they're very, very fun.
I've worn a pizza costume in play with cartoon hands. Setting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Setting.
Setting. Couldn't see a thing. Couldn't see a thing.
No, and those events are absolutely as fun as they can be. But again, you come down, you can play, and then watch the very, very best in the world. And Carrie Walsh is going to be playing, and she's been helping promote the event. And, you know, she's coming back from her last child.
Picked up a ninth this past week in Stade.
As predicted by Geeter last week, by the way.
Good call on his way out the door.
Yeah.
And she's very excited to be able specifically to play in the World Series part of this event. She's committed to do it, and she wants to showcase the sport of beach volleyball in the country and around the world with this World Series cup. But, I mean, obviously also for the Grand Slam.
Those listening around the United States and the world aren't necessarily familiar with the six men. They've heard us talk about the event that happens in Manhattan Beach and had been a huge party in Manhattan Beach, gotten too big for the city to handle. Have you guys annexed that event then? This is the Charlie Sagley six man, or
well,
is this just
well, no.
another six man?
And it's interesting because we talked to Charlie Sagley's son,
Jay,
and asked him if he wanted to participate because the city of Manhattan Beach, because the event became so large in Manhattan Beach, they actually moved it to during the middle of the week.
Right.
And they placed a lot of restrictions, and it became more and more expensive. And everybody understands why. It really was kind of out of – it was so big and so fun, it was just a little bit out of control. So they had to, you know, rein it in a little bit. And we wanted Jay to be part of our event. We didn't want to compete with the Manhattan Six Man. We wanted him to be part of it. And it just, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And so there will be a Manhattan Six Man the following week during the middle of the week, and you know, the teams will continue to play in that. But there'll be another opportunity for the teams who can't play in the middle of the week to play on the weekend in Long Beach on the 27th and 28th. And it should be – well, there's no limitation on how many teams, and there's a lot of space down there, so it should be a lot of fun.
All right, so now I have to stay in costume for 10 days, not just two. I have to go between tournaments.
Back and forth.
Keep my pizza costume on.
Absolutely. You get a day break in between.
Okay, I can take the cartoon hands off, maybe do some typing. Good. All right, so make sure that you check this out. If you're anywhere in the Southern California area or you're planning a trip to Southern California, July 22nd to the 28th, you got to come out and be a part of this in one way or another. Get down to Long Beach. Great area to be. They have lots of parking.
Yeah, when I was lots
down there
of parking,
last time.
Lots of space, lots to do down. It's right downtown. It's right next to the marina. It's easy to get to, easy to see from the main drag there. And it should be great. You can walk.
Food, beer garden.
You can walk to you know, 50 restaurants
right.
Or within walking distance.
Take the kids to the aquarium if you want.
Yeah. And the Queen Mary, you'll be looking at the Queen Mary when you either serve or receive every ball. it's very, very convenient, big beach. And with all the music, and they just announced the music, and I don't know if it's on the website right now, but they just announced all the music components of the event. And their names that people will recognize. You know, they went out of their way to make sure they had very popular music coming to the event. And it's every day, so I think, starting on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jeremy, you probably know what's
I'll
going
be there.
On more than
well,
anybody.
The music
right?
side, a little bit.
Well, DJ Jeremy Roche will be headlining. Everyone
well,
else
obviously.
Will be.
I'll be headlining for 8 to 10 hours per day on Stadium Court starting on Thursday.
Did you see the lineup of
I saw some of them. I have to go back and – I saw, like, the tentative list. I want to make sure I don't say –
Things that aren't, that
aren't
to be said.
Well, that aren't confirmed. I can't remember which ones are confirmed from the list I saw.
I don't see
but
one
all
right
the
on
names,
the front end,
all the names on there will be
they'll,
things that people know.
They will be put on the website either today and I think at the latest tomorrow, because they just confirmed their whole list, and so they should be up on the website, the World Series of Beach Volleyball website, which is WSOBV.com.
All right, and I'm going to make sure I sign up for the $1,000 grand prize, the Bud Light Bikini Contest.
That's right.
You're going to be in the bikini contest?
Well, I can wear the banana hammock. Anyways, there'll also be broadcast television coverage. It'll be on NBC Sports Network as well as Universal and NBC Sports. Actually, on Saturday, July 27th, they will have on NBC Sports the men's gold medal NBC Live, 4:30 Eastern Time. So that'll be 1:30 p.m. if you're out there on Saturday, you want to see the men's gold medal final. You'll have an opportunity to watch it live on television if you're not here in the Southern California area. NBC Sports Network, NBCSN.
If people haven't come and seen, one, a professional event, I mean, let alone an international event with the best teams around the world, all the Olympians, it's such a great opportunity, and it's free. It's all free. There's no charge. And if you want special seating, they will, you know, accommodate you. You can pay for special seating. But the general admission is zero.
Okay. That's a good price.
To see the best
absolutely.
Volleyball players in the world.
Yeah.
All of them in one place.
And they're very accessible. I mean, our sport is, I mean, even way more so than indoors. Although I know the indoor teams, after the matches, they usually come over and they
sure.
mingle with the crowd a little bit. But the beach players can't get away from the crowd.
Yeah.
They're there.
Even when they want to.
Yeah. Wherever they go, they're amongst the crowd. So it's a pretty cool thing. And the players are you know, friendly. They don't bite you. Even though on the court, and I got this, you know, when I was playing, we're pretty intense when we play. But after the game's over, you know, generally after a couple minutes at least.
Yeah,
right.
Depends on if you won or lost.
Yeah. We're
after Karch is done ripping the net down in Rhode Island.
Yeah, yeah. Take a deep breath.
Sign some autographs.
Yeah. Well, maybe he didn't recover from that so quickly. But most of the players recover fairly quickly and are normal people after they finish playing and are more than willing to talk and sign autographs. And yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a neat sport that way.
I found a list of the confirmed acts.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
Read them off.
So Thursday, Cisco Adler and Banana Beat plus special guests. And here's what I can say about the special guests. You want to be around for the special guests.
Okay.
Some of them they can't really talk about yet, but it's trust me.
It's part of their contract.
Yes, exactly.
Right, they
yeah.
cannot, but
yes.
it'll be exciting.
The special guests.
Okay.
Yeah.
Friday. You don't want to blow anybody's contract here like we've
correct.
Done before on this show.
Yeah. Friday, Ryan Cabrera plus a special performance.
Ooh. Ryan Cabrera?
Yeah.
I've got one of his songs.
Friday, Parachute, DJ Vice, and special guests. Saturday, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Danny Avila, Bonobo, and YLA with special guests. And then Sunday, DJ Irie from the Miami Heat will be on Stadium Court with me.
Do I want to be there for each special guest? Like, is there a big-name band each night that can't be announced? I mean, I've heard
you,
some of the,
because
name,
you have
but.
Kids and families, like, you should be there at least Saturday for the special guests.
Justin Bieber's going to be at the World Series.
The Bieber? All the Believers?
Are you kidding me?
All the Believers will be there? I don't know if Justin fits into the volleyball community. So that's what is confirmed at the moment.
Okay.
Some good names.
So, Sinjin, with you here, I wondered why there isn't a copy of your 2008 book along with you.
Which one?
The Everyday Champion.
Which one that year? Yeah, which New York Times bestseller?
The Everyday Champion, a real-life guide to feeling good, looking good, and staying healthy after 35. I could use this book. I'm 39.
Sold out. I'll try and find one for you.
I love it.
I'll try and find one for you.
Signed copy. You mentioned you've stayed involved with the sport. Well, one of the ways you stayed involved with the sport is as a parent. And you and I had an opportunity to do the CIF Southern Section Championships presented by Ford on FoxSportsWest.com a few weeks ago. And you did the finals with a certain Hagen Smith and the Loyola Cubs facing off with the Huntington Beach Oilers in the finals. What's it like to be a parent of a volleyball player in the club system, the high school system, the way that volleyball is now? What's it like to sit on the other side and be a spectator?
I think it's probably difficult for most athletes to watch their children play. You know,
to play their own sport,
yeah,
especially?
Well, particularly their own sport. But I think it's probably true with any sport, because if you're an athlete, you're competitive, and it doesn't matter what sport they're playing, and you're still involved, and you want them to do well, and you kind of feel like you know what it takes for them to do well. And I think I've stayed back far enough where, you know, he's his own player. He's doing his own thing. I was friendly to the coaches and kind of made myself available to them, but didn't impress upon them anything along the way, high school or in the club system. I was fortunate that Hagen is just a really good player, and he did what he can do, and he played well and is now going to UCLA and will play for them starting in the fall.
He's listed as an outside hitter setter. What's he going to UCLA?
No, he was recruited as a libero as a junior.
Okay.
That's the position he played on club. And, you know, but he I think, fancied himself as a setter, a hitter, could do anything, which he's a really good athlete. He can do. As a senior, they needed him to play the hitting position and the setting position. So that's what he did. And it was interesting because the coaches that were recruiting him saw him as a libero, and then all of a sudden they see this kid that's doing everything out on the court, you know, when he's a senior, and they're going, wait a minute, who's that guy? And then UCLA coaches, Brad Keller in particular, the assistant coach to John Sparrow, he was standing around a bunch of coaches, and they were looking, and he's setting, he's hitting, he's doing all this stuff, and they were kind of, you know, talking about him. And Brad goes, hold on, guys, he's coming to UCLA.
Already got him. Already got him, everybody.
So it's a really neat thing to see that, I mean, you always want your kid to do well, but Hagen is his own man now. He's 18.
Yeah.
So he
doesn't have to listen to you ever again.
You know, and I think it's a problem if you push too much. They don't want to listen to you. But he comes to me and he asks me certain questions about certain things that go on. And he knows I'm a wealth of information, but I'm there only if he needs me.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I've noticed, since I've been around UCLA the past couple of years, I see you there, not just at volleyball things, but at basketball games and stuff like that. Has that been a conscious effort on your part to still be involved with the school? I mean, I know they honor you. I was there last year. They did some stuff for you, like you're out on the court during a basketball game. Is that something you'd like to still be around?
Well, it's my school, you know, and I won two championships, and I'm in their Hall of Fame, and you know, they've supported me, and I continue to support them. I followed, you know, I followed the volleyball team ever since I left there in 1979, and then I coached with Al Skates. I was one of his assistants his very last year, his 50th year, mm-hmm. which was an exciting thing for me to do. And I'll continue to go. I mean, if Hagen wasn't there, I'd still support the team. I mean, it's my school, and conveniently, it's just a few miles away from where I live too, which helps out quite a bit.
What was more fun, the coaching aspect, being in the gym with Al, or dinner after the match with Al?
Al's pretty fun. He's fun all the time. I mean, when it comes to business and he needs to do something, everybody has to, you know, toe the line, but. But he's a unique coach, a unique person, and he knows how to enjoy himself as well. So we always had a good time. As a player, not as much, you know. I mean, because he you know, you're his player. After you're done, it's a whole different relationship when it comes to Al. And he has friendships with all of his players throughout all of the years. He remembers things I just can't believe from all his teams. Imagine 50 years and all the success he had. So, yeah, he's an incredible guy. And I'm fortunate to have an opportunity to play golf with him every once in a while. And that's a real treat, too. And he has not lost his competitive edge in any way, shape, or form. You know, and he has a group of guys that he plays with.
He's talking trash.
Oh, my God. And very competitive. And if you're on his team, he's going to help you all the way. If you know, after the first nine, sometimes the teams switch. And if you're off his team, even if you're riding in his cart.
Oh, he's just tearing you down.
Oh, yeah. Al, what do you see here? Is it a little left or right? He goes, I'm not telling you. a lot of fun. Al's a great guy.
All right, well, listen, I want to take you back in the Wayback Machine. In just a minute, we're going to run our Coach's Corner segment with Tom Black. But then I want to go back and have you, I remember a dinner in Portland years ago when I first started broadcasting, hearing about the history of the AVP and its initial kind of descent from its grandeur of the middle 90s and then its rebirth. And I just want to kind of give our listeners, from someone who was there, a view of what exactly happened. People always ask us all the time, what happened to beach volleyball? What happened to the AVP? Why did it happen? What were some of the mistakes? What were some of the things maybe to be learned? I want to take you through that after we run our Coach's Corner segment here with Tom Black. This is me catching up with Tom after the Long Beach match. Remember, Tom Black is the head coach of the Loyola Marymount women, and he has also recently been named assistant coach for the women's national team under Karch Karai, and I think part of the new young blood that's out there in the coaching world, an opportunity to hear from one of the guys sitting at a top level at a young age.
The different one. Catching up after USA versus Japan with USA national team assistant coach Tom Black. And Tom, just tell me about your time so far. How's it been working with Karch?
That's been great. Yeah, I've learned a ton from Karch. He's doing a phenomenal job. You know, he does what he expects of the girls. He gets better every day, and it's going great.
How do you tell if Karch is upset or if Karch is happy? Because he's pretty even out here on the floor.
Yeah, didn't they call him the computer when he played? You know, it's pretty similar. He's pretty steady.
I want to make a T-shirt with the many faces of Karch Karai. You could wear it.
Yeah, it'll be like one picture, right? You
know? Right, exactly. Exactly. Hey, you're now into the international game, still coaching at Loyola Marymount.
Yeah.
What are the differences you see that really are stark between the two games, between the two athletes, between the way the two games run?
Well, obviously, I mean, everything's a little better because it's a higher level. They, you know, international players read the game a lot better. They're able to do more in good and bad situations. You know, just the whole level of play is higher. You know, I can't think of any aspect that isn't, you know, better, faster, or, you know, players can do more. So I think the change is just another level up.
What will you do differently, do you think, when you get back to the college team?
I think when you coach these athletes, I think it makes you a better teacher because you if they don't buy into what you're saying, they're going to let you know it. You know, so you got to really, you know, think about what you're saying and how to teach. I think that makes me a better teacher. So I, you know, hopefully it just makes me a little bit better as I go back.
Yeah. Is there anything that before you thought, well, I don't want to teach that to my college kids, but now you see here at the international level what's possible or what's needed or what's different? and now you'll take that back and maybe change philosophically about the game, your view of the game?
No, it's the other way around. We're trying to accelerate how the game is played with the women, and I think there's a lot of resistance in the women's game about how the women's game is played, and we're trying to break through that. It's more about kind of incorporating what we believe and get it going, and I think we're seeing it, and we'll keep seeing it as the clock goes on.
Why does that resistance exist?
Well, I think for a long time, I think there's a lot of things that have been done maybe because they're women, and we don't know if that's always valid. We think, women can do anything men can do, and, I think we're going to keep doing that, keep getting better at that, and I think, it could change the game over the course of the quad. There's a lot of different reasons for it. I think the women's game is played so many different ways, and all these girls are coming from different backgrounds, so they're trying to learn a new system. So, there's a lot of reasons for it, but we're seeing some progress, and I think we'll keep seeing it.
Like the men's team, you have a lot of young players. It looks like a giant jigsaw puzzle. What percentage of that puzzle do you think you guys have put together?
You mean like for the final?
Yeah, for 4 years from now. Why not?
Man, it's so
what
hard.
Percentage?
I have no idea. That's
5?
No idea. That's the whole thing with the quad. I mean, how do you predict where someone's going to be in 4 years? But we have so many young players that are doing a great job. So it's pretty exciting to think about. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but we have a lot of players that could do it, so it's exciting to think about where it's going to end up.
How many full teams could you field in an international game right now? Because last year, I think the U.S. proved they had 2. Do you have 3 now?
Man, I think we had at least 3 last quad. I mean, not we. We have at least 2, I would say at least. And that's the strength of our country. Women's volleyball has become a major sport, and there's all these great players throughout our country, so we have a lot of good players.
From a staff perspective, how is your staff divided up on the national team level? What does Karch have you focusing on, have Reed focusing on, and then how are you going to take any of that aspect back to your own program?
We have a pretty small staff compared to the rest of the world, so we all have to have our hands in everything, but mainly I'm more offense and Reed is more defense, and Karch is obviously overseeing everything, but I'm really focusing with the setters, and Reed is focusing with our blockers and our middles. But then, when we get into practice, we all kind of have to have our hands in everything. It's just it's kind of the way it's been going. What was the second part you were asking?
Well, and how does that structure what you're being asked to do here at the national team, you as a coach, how do you take that back to your university?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty similar structure in college. You have 2 assistants also, I've got Ron Larson assistant. He's okay. He knows a little bit about
it. He's got a couple of years on him.
Yeah, he's got some experience, so he's doing a great job with our setters and making spin on defense. So it's a pretty similar structure. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks for your time. Yeah.
So I'm going to put that on.
Hey, good opportunity there to hear from Tom Black. And an opportunity for you, if you're in the Southern California area ever and the national team is practicing, you can go into the gym. They made this announcement at the events, and I don't know if people were listening, but you can go into practice. You can watch practice. You can talk to Karch. You can talk to Tom. You can talk to any member of that staff after practice, please. Don't walk up to them in the middle of the drill. But after practice, these people are more than happy to speak to you. You talk about the accessibility of beach athletes just in the way the tournament is structured. These guys are available every day, too. Athletes at their practice, you go down and say hi to them. Not while they're spiking. But go down and say hi to these folks. If you have a question for one of these people, go offer to buy them lunch. I'm sure Tom Black will go to lunch with you. He's not making that much money at either place. He'll take a free lunch.
And give him a hug. See how that goes over.
He's got a young family. He can save money on lunch.
No, that's pretty amazing that they are opening it up like that. And to me, it makes complete sense. I mean, why wouldn't you? You want to develop a bigger fan base. You want to be, more friendly to the public, and I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's something that has to be done, and a unique aspect of volleyball currently, I think, has always been a unique aspect of volleyball. We were talking off air, and I was wondering if you had ever seen some of the great volleyball movies. I know you were in.
Did you say great volleyball movies?
Yeah. Did I say great? I'm just being a volleyball homer at that point.
Yeah.
Side Out. You're in Side Out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Spiker. I asked you if you'd seen it. You said, I think so.
I think I saw it. It's the one Al's in, right? Is that the one?
This is with Coach Domes. This is the Doug Beal, Coach Domes, Catch Ficelli instead of Karch Karai.
Yeah, right. Nice.
And I forget the other guy's name, but there are cameos from the entire basically 84 team, Rod Wild and Karch and Steve Timmons, Craig Buck. They're all in it. I can put it up.
Poor Rod.
The show, I will
Rod
put it on.
Broke his leg.
Oh, it's
That's
awful.
How Marlowe made it back onto the team in 84.
is an unfortunate twist of fate for Rod.
Yeah.
And a good one for Marlo.
Sorry, I digress.
But it covers it in its own awful way. It covers that time period when there were some choices being made about indoor national team and the emerging beach volleyball scene. What was that like to be a part of that thing?
It started before that.
Okay.
Because you remember the national team before that was stationed in Ohio.
Right,
in
Dayton,
Ohio.
I hear about it from Sunderland all the time.
Oh, my God. And Sunderland was one of the first guys from the West Coast to go back and join the team because most West Coast guys wouldn't do it, the top players.
Right.
It's
cold back there.
Oh, my God.
There's no sun.
So they actually made the decision to go out of the way to attract some of the West Coast players to go back there in 1979. To join the national team to try to qualify for the 80 Olympics. And so they enticed, not with money, I assure you, but they enticed me, Hovland, Pat Powers, Dusty Dvorak, to name a few, and some of the guys from Ohio State, Aldi and
Aldis Berzins,
yeah, and Waldy, Mark Waldy, and Duilius, and
Rich DeWillius?
Rich, okay. Baby. Rich, tremendous athlete, but he was a little different from most of the guys. I got along great with him, but he could do things that nobody could do. He was so physical. You know, at that time, he could hit the BIC that people weren't hitting. He was tremendous. But so they attracted all of us to come back to Ohio, a little harder for us from the West Coast than the guys from Ohio State.
Yeah.
And we trained, and we didn't. You know, the boycott happened, and they realized at that point they had to move the national team out to the West Coast because that's where the majority of the players were from. And they finally did move down to San Diego. So everyone joined the team who was good enough. They went through all the trials. The bummer was they just didn't have a lot of money, and we ended up, there were probably 10 of us in a two-bedroom condominium, most of us sleeping on the floor in sleeping bags. But it really didn't matter. To us.
Eating at Sioux Plantation?
I mean, it was in, yeah, exactly. But it was in San Diego, California. It's not that bad. So we would go, I mean, Doug doesn't like to hear this, I'm sure, but we would go to practice every day from 8 to 12, and then he'd try to kill us because that's what Doug did.
He did that practice. Later, too. That was a Doug-ism.
And then Karch and I and some of the other guys from the team would go down to South Mission, and we'd put on a weight belt. And we'd play against whoever wanted to play against us because we were a little better than most of the guys at that time.
With the weight belt on.
With the weight belt on.
Awesome.
So we would play after a big submarine sandwich from the market right there, we'd come out and we'd play for 4 or 5 hours, and then we were required to go back and lift weights. And we'd go back and lift weights for another hour, 2 hours.
And you must have been in some physical shape.
And we did this every day. And guess what? We loved it. We absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. I mean, it was in San Diego. I mean, you know, and we were sleeping on the floor in the condominium. Didn't matter. It was absolutely awesome.
Now, you and Karch have a history playing tournaments together. You barely overlap at UCLA, but how did you guys end up playing beach tournaments together?
After we had all the success at UCLA, that his freshman year, my senior year, we went undefeated. We won the NCAA championships. We went right to the beach and started playing in the beach events. And remember, they were all amateur events, basically. There was no prize money. Maybe you win a volleyball or a beach chair or something.
Violation.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark it down. I'll have the NCAA investigate.
Lyndon was already out of college at that point.
But of course we didn't accept it.
Of course not.
Of course not. Of course we did. So, but it was in the beach tournaments at the time, even though they're amateur, there's still thousands and thousands of people coming down to watch, and we would go out and we would play and we would win just about everything we played in. And we'd go back to the national team and practice when we had to practice, and we kept it secret that we were playing on the beach all this time. eventually I left the national team, and not by my choosing. I don't know how to explain it other than Doug and I didn't see eye to eye on things. But at the same time, in about a year's period of time, Randy was on the national team, Mike Dodd was on the national team, Tim Hovland was on the national team, and the four of us were all off the national team for various reasons, you know, during that, like, you know, 80, 81, 82 period of time. So we all, of course, concentrated on the beach after that, and then shortly after the AVP formed, and then
yeah.
we, you know, battled against each other on the AVP.
Okay, I often hear about the 80 women's team that did not get to go to the Olympics because of the boycott. Okay. Did you guys not qualify? Would you have been an 80 Olympian if the Olympics had happened for the U.S.?
You know, the timing of the qualification, we went to Bulgaria to qualify.
Which had to be rough in 80.
And it was like the final... Yeah, it was.
It's rough nowadays.
Well, there's other stories that go along with amazing stories, but forget that for now. So we went there to play in this last qualification event, and while we were there is when I believe the boycott happened, or there was discussion of the boycott.
Okay.
And we ended up playing against Bulgaria in a match that we lost. So I don't know. I'm not exactly sure, but I kind of think that we may not have gone either way. But the boycott happened while we were playing in that event.
Because people forget with the U.S. you have to qualify. I think some remembered last year because the U.S. had to qualify so late. But that the U.S., they've just gotten used to being in. You don't get grandfathered in, even if you're the defending gold medalist.
Yeah, except in 84 and in 96 when you're the host country.
Exactly.
But, yeah, it's. I mean, I watch our national team sometimes, and I'm going, oh, my God, we may not be in the Olympics. There's
right.
a chance we're not going to get there. And you know, we've had respectable teams all the way along, ever since I can remember. But there's the competition worldwide is so tough that it's not a gimme. The U.S., just because it's the U.S., doesn't get in automatically. They have to qualify.
There have been some close calls.
Oh, yeah.
99, early 2000 against Canada, in Canada.
Yeah.
I think four sets, but it was close. And they had beaten us earlier in the tournament. And then Cuba, to get into 04, had to go 5 against Cuba in, like, Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a little bit gnarly to try and get into the Olympics sometimes.
You know what's interesting? And when I started playing, even on the junior level indoors internationally, and I started to realize it there, but more so in 80 and during that period of time when I was on the national team, that a lot of these Eastern Bloc teams, the athletes were unbelievable. They were big. They were strong. They were volleyball players. And here's the little U.S. team coming up against them. And we were little. I mean, relatively small compared to, you know, all these teams. And we figured out a way to beat them. And I was thinking, why does that happen? You know, are we just better or what? And I came to the conclusion that these guys from Eastern Europe, the Russians, and they didn't have a choice to play.
Hmm.
They were, you know, they grabbed them, they took them when they realized they were going to be tall kids or they were athletic or whatever, and they started putting them through the grind. And they knew what they were going to have to do, and they were there, and they were doing their job, basically.
That was it.
We, to be a part of the team, would sleep on the floor of a condominium. We didn't, you know, we didn't care. We loved the sport. We wanted to play. You know, it was our choice, and that is what I think made the big difference in our success playing against all these bigger, stronger, I don't know if they were better or not, but, you know, teams that on paper you'd think that we would not beat, we were beating them.
Well, and you were stoked, like, in the beginning of Spiker, where you're getting a letter from USA Volleyball, and you're driving down to the beach in your Jeep, and you huck that letter into the top, and then you arrive at the beach, no warm-up, nothing, just, hey, what's up? Take off, rip off your shirt, and spike a ball.
That's how it goes, right?
That's the opening scene of Spiker.
Perfect.
Well, that might have been Hav. But I think the character, the character they built up, the kind of...
There's Kat Ficelli, who's the heroine, uh-huh. And then there's the other guy who goes to the beach.
Yeah. Well, I think they probably combined several players that eventually ended up on the beach to make that one character.
And that guy disagrees with Coach Domes, a.k.a. Douglas P. Beal, and has his run-ins with him, including a thing that allegedly took place, I think, in Poland, where he shows up with a couple of chicks to the dinner, the team dinner. He brings a couple of Polish ladies in to that. Something like that.
Who did that?
Ever
was
happen?
That, was that Kachkavelli or the
no,
other
it was
guy?
No, the other guy. It was the other guy. Yeah, I'm going to have to look up. I forget the other guy's name, but I actually saw it happen with us. But
there's certain things like that may have happened.
Can't confirm or deny, Kevin.
You know, Doug at that time was a pretty serious guy. Well, I don't think he's changed
at
much.
That time. Yeah.
And he didn't understand how we could, and this is my own personal experience, and it's my opinion, how we could work hard, give everything we could to the game, and go out and have fun also. I just don't think it was part of his DNA, his makeup, to get what it was to be, fun-loving, but incredibly competitive and able to work really, really hard. Because I remember on the team, you know, everybody complained how Doug was so hard. I never saw it. I felt like, bring it and bring more. And when you're done thinking you've killed me, I'm ready to go for more. Because nice. I loved it. And I don't think he understood that even, how he could run us through all this stuff and then have us come back for more with a smile on our face. It killed him. I think he would have been great in the Russian system where he
yeah.
had guys that just, you know.
That's what you did.
You know, say, yes, okay, yes, coach, yes, coach, yes, coach. And we, you know. Some of us had ideas that maybe Doug didn't agree with, but we weren't afraid to express those ideas about how the team might be better, how we could do certain things, or it was okay to have fun. He didn't get that.
Sonny Reston was the other guy that they created. Patrick Hauser actually played Catch Facelli.
All right. Yeah, Sonny, I think, was a combination of several players who obviously didn't end up being on that 84 team.
But had their run-ins with Coach Domes.
Yes.
Okay, so I wanted, before the break, wanting you to take us through the late years of the AVP. This is 90, 95, 96, 97, your understanding of it.
It's hard not to go back further than that.
Okay, good.
Because, Leonard Armato came to us in 1983 when there were a couple professional events and there was a promoter kind of, let's just say at the time we felt taking advantage of who we were without really working together with the players. So Leonard came and said, you guys can own your sport. And we said, really? How? And he goes, I'll do it for you. And we went, great. He let us use his offices. He did everything for us to help develop the AVP and build the AVP. And we worked with him too. I can remember going with him to Miller Beer and going with him to NBC and going with him. And they needed to see that the players could actually communicate and were personalities and everything else.
College educated.
Yeah, so we helped him in that way. But it was all about him. And there was nobody at the time who could do what he did. And in fact, I believe at any time can do what he did and what he's doing now again. So he built the sport up. We were making, the prize money was millions of dollars by the time 1990 when the player organization that he built for us said, we don't need you.
Well, I mean, the child has to leave the parent at some point, right?
Well, yeah, you could say that. So what happened? So he's gone. The players take over. They hire, an executive director, a CEO. And, in fact, throughout the 90s, they had four different CEOs.
Who are these guys? What are the names?
Jeff Dankworth, Jerry Solomon, one more in between, and then the one who finally buried the organization was Billy Berger. He was in charge. He said he would save the day for all the players, and he wasn't able to do it. And not that he didn't try, and not that he wasn't good at what he did, but not at the level it needed to be at.
Yeah.
And how did these guys get those positions? Like, where did they come from?
Player organization.
Here's part of the story.
Player organization. Basically based on, I actually helped them find Jeff Dankworth, the guy that replaced Leonard mm-hmm. Armato. Leonard Armato wanted to own part of the organization,
yeah.
which we all thought, at least I did, I thought, well, you deserve it. You built it.
Yeah.
You've done all the work.
Yeah.
We've done nothing but play and take the money that you brought for us. So I'm happy that you would want to be involved in the long, going forward.
Yeah.
And what, 15%, 20% of the organization? I don't really care. And the players, remember, we went from making nothing to having, millions of dollars in prize money
mm-hmm.
because of him. So, okay, great. So for me, it was not a problem. But for the other players, they thought, oh, he's making money, several different ways, and now he wants to own part of it. We don't think that's good.
Yeah.
And so
I mean, this is maybe more details than you need. Leonard said, go out and find a lawyer to look at the contract for this ownership, you know, situation. So I went to UCLA. Jeff Dankworth was a sports attorney at the time. And I brought him in, let him look at the deal, and he said, okay, you know, yes on certain things, no on certain things. The contract went back to the board. I left town. I came back in town. Jeff Dankworth had now become the Leonard Armato. He was the one negotiating the deal on behalf of the players to give ownership to Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leonard went away because they offered him a deal he could not accept.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, the guy who negotiated the deal became the CEO.
Hmm.
Kind of an interesting thing.
Interesting.
Seems like it's not right. But, okay, so that happened. And Jeff went through.
What year is this?
This is 1990-91.
Okay.
So Jeff was there. Big earthquake in the valley happened, and he ended up moving out of town. So he left the AVP. They brought
That's 94.
That's the big earthquake.
The Northridge quake is 94.
Okay. So that's
January of 94.
Okay. So he left shortly after that because his wife didn't want to go through another earthquake.
Okay. It was rough. I lived a mile from the epicenter. That was a rough one.
Woo! So I believe right after that was the timeline exactly I'm not sure of, but Karch's agent at the time was Jerry Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
And Karch somehow got him to be the new CEO. I don't know if it was right after Jeff or there was a period of time before he came in. But so Jerry became, and he started to change things, and it was interesting because he was owning certain events as a CEO, and then Karch was a part of his group, and people couldn't figure out how Karch could be part of the group on the board voting for things for his agent to own, and then he would own part of the event, but it wasn't disclosed. It was another interesting time of the sport.
Things are still cranking along, though. We're talking 94, 95. The dollars are still there.
Yeah.
The publicity is still there.
What Leonard had built kept riding.
Right.
No different relationships. It kept riding based on what he did. And then when the sponsors weren't feeling all the love that they had, they started to back up a little bit and not give as much money. And then, you know, Jerry Solomon ended up leaving, and then Mr. Berger came in and said he would save the day, and of course he wasn't able to do it. It was above his grade, and that it was gone. And I called up Leonard.
This is 98.
This
basically
end of the 90s.
97, 98.
End of the 90s. So I called up Leonard. I said, Leonard, do you know what's going on with the AVP? And he goes, I don't want anything to do with them. And I go, no, it's interesting. Come take a look at what's happening. And he saw that it was gone, basically. And he saw an opportunity to bring the women together with the men.
Yep.
So he came in, he raised some money, and he started to build it back up.
01.
Yeah. So he started with a handful of events. He added events each year. Crocs came on board just based on his relationship with
them. I think it was Sunkist originally.
Yeah.
And then maybe Nissan.
Yeah.
And then it was Crocs.
Yeah. And with Crocs, everything started to move. And then by, I don't know, 2 years ago or something, Leonard had made an offer to Shamrock, which is...
This is 2009 or so, right? 8 or 9,
I believe. I think it was 2008 when they had the Shamrock deal.
Yeah. Jeremy's there at that point.
And Shamrock offered $40 million to buy the AVP. And guaranteed $4, $5, $6, $7 million in prize money for the next 4 years. It seems like
looking back on it, you're like, wait a second.
Can I sign that?
Yeah, it seems like it. And it, you know, everyone has a different view of what actually happened. And again, I think some people were concerned that Leonard was going to make too much money. I go, what's too much money when you're talking about having a company, a Disney company, involved in owning the sport with their venues, with their television, with their
right.
commercial, you know, expertise, commercialization expertise. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better company to take the sport into the future, regardless of who makes what. I can understand that some of the investors didn't get all their money or enough money or whatever, but the product itself, it was going to go, had to go in the right direction from that point. So The investors and players basically didn't approve the deal, so that deal went away. The investors were able, at that point, even though Leonard was the owner who brought it out of bankruptcy and brought in the investors, they pushed him out at that point. And then about a year later?
Yeah. I think it was 2009 when those new investors kind of came in and pushed Leonard out.
Basically, it went back into bankruptcy.
2010. Long Beach, it ceased operations after
middle of 2010.
Middle of
show up the event. Yeah, this could be the last one.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So there you go. And then the guy who controlled, who put it into bankruptcy and then was able to buy the name out of bankruptcy himself, you know, and now he controls.
Right. I don't understand that.
Yeah,
how that's
I don't
legal.
Either. That's, yeah. But so he controlled the brand. Nothing was happening with the brand. And finally, Donald's son bought the brand last year or at some point.
Right.
Yeah, 2011,
and
I think.
Early,
yeah.
Or late 11, early 12.
Late, yeah.
And he, I don't think he really knew exactly what he was getting into. I think the people around him probably were kind of giving him a flowery view of what was ahead potentially for him and owning the sport. But that said, he was very enthusiastic. He wanted to do something with the sport. He wanted to build it back up. He grew up seeing the AVP brand and kind of following it. So last year he put on a few events, and I think it cost him, you know, out of pocket. And this year he's going to try and do the same thing and upgrade a little bit more. But it appears as if, and I keep looking for information, but it's hard to get a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
It appears as if he's going to have to spend more money just to stay where he is and move things in a positive direction. So we'll see what happens. And there's a lot of other stuff going on kind of behind the scenes that we don't have time to talk about. But, you know, it's...
Feel free to enlighten us on anything that might be interesting.
Well, I know that that Donald wanted the commitment from the top players to attend his events and not attend any other events.
Right.
Which I don't think is legal, but still the players signed a contract, and it created some confusion when the international event came to the United States and what the players were going to be able to play in. And, you know, again, there's a lot of things we could talk about based on that kind of issue, because the FIVB, they worry about what they call rogue tours around the world. And if they are telling players what they can and can't play in, not the national governing body, but just a professional tour, then they will blackball that tour. And they will say, if you play in that tour, then you cannot represent your country because you're not going through the national governing body. The national governing body actually says they are not a sanctioned tour. And then the FIVB says, okay, anyone playing in that tour cannot participate in the world tour, which means you cannot get to the Olympic Games. So there's been a little bit of gray water kind of swirling around, you know, the AVP and participation in the World Tour. But bottom line is, all the top players will be there in Long Beach.
You told me a couple of years ago you thought the AVP brand would still be the brand for beach volleyball, that it still had value and public recognition enough to support that value. Do you still think that's the case?
I still think that the general public now, the fans of volleyball still see the AVP as the brand. On the corporate level, I think they're tired of hearing about the AVP.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's going to take to turn that around, I'm not so sure. But having any kind of fight with any organization is not helping the cause for the AVP. You know, they should be the ones welcoming everybody and trying to build off what everybody else is doing, because the AVP still has value, again, to the general public, but to the corporate world, it's got a very diminished value, and they have to do something different to get them to come back.
Isn't that contract that they signed with the AVP this year, isn't that similar to a contract that was signed with Leonard Armato?
I don't know the details of the contract, but I would suspect that it's at some level, yes.
Similar idea.
I think there was exclusive deals back in the day, too.
Bingo. Right. There was a lot of controversy, I remember, around 2006 when I first moved here with Todd Rogers and Jason Ring and those guys trying to form a players union and getting quite upset about the player contracts that were being enforced at that point.
Well, there was also some issues with, like, there were some FIVB events and AVP events scheduled the same weekend.
Right.
And some of the top players would be like, I'm playing internationally because that's what I need to do to get to the Olympics. And I remember there being a little bit of drama about that as well.
Yeah, the difference, I think, then and now was that there were millions of dollars at stake from sponsors and television
then.
Guaranteed for the players at
right.
that time.
Yeah.
Right.
And Leonard was in jeopardy of losing that if he could not get a commitment from the players.
Yep.
Today is a little bit different. They're kind of behind a little bit from where they were, a lot of it. You know, there's not a lot there. I mean, I think there were some things promised by the AVP last year that didn't actually happen. And I think, it, you know, you got to wonder if they don't have a major sponsor and they don't have great television, are they going to be able to fulfill what they say they can do as far as the number of tournaments, the amount of prize money, and actually build it going into the future? Because, you know, today, I wish them the best of luck, and I hope it all works out for the AVP because I want the players to be able to play and survive and you know, as professional athletes.
That's a real issue for them right now.
Yeah, absolutely. But based on what the AVP is offering, you know, the players probably should be able to play in whatever they want as long as, you know, it doesn't conflict with what the AVP is trying to accomplish. I mean, you know, even making a few thousand dollars on a free weekend, you know, they should be able to do that, at least in my mind. And again, the top athletes are one thing, you know, the next tier of athletes are another. I mean, why would you restrict anyone, you know, below the athletes that would, I mean, the top athletes are going to get on television. They're going to be the marquee players. They're going to promote them and everything else. But those other players, they got nothing, you know, and they can't go anywhere. So it's an interesting time. If the AVP is able to continue to write checks, or, you know, I'm sure they hope they can bring in a major sponsor that can pay for everything and get the right television to warrant that. But until they do, it's going to be a very, very difficult road to make things happen. And that's why I think you got to have the players have to have other opportunities. And again, should they be restricted in playing in World Tour events, which are the most lucrative events in the world right now, and that is the road to the Olympic Games, I mean, you know, it's a tough one for the AVP to even consider telling them they can't play on the World Tour.
You're listening to Net Live on a Monday. We have special guest host St. John Smith sitting in with us here, Jeremy Ruscha and Kevin Barnett. And St. John, battles between the domestic entities, domestic tours, and the international tour are nothing new. In 1994, you decided to not take your ball and go home. You decided to take your ball and get on an airplane three-quarters of the time and go play on the FIVB full-time. Why did you make that decision at that point when the AVP was supposedly the preeminent tour in the world for beach volleyball and the FIVB was kind of the upstart?
Well, again, we have to go back a little bit further because in the mid-80s, a promoter who from Brazil who went to USC, a tennis player, Fernando Van Ortsen, saw what was going on with the sport when he was at USC in college, saw the events in Southern California and what Leonard was doing with the AVP and the kind of success. He went back to Brazil and he proposed basically a USA versus Brazil exhibition. It was such a huge success that he and I went to the FIVB, the international governing body, to propose basically a world tour and involve more countries and a world championships. And at that time, Ruben Acosta was the president.
Right.
He saw the value in this, and I think he was thinking ahead already to the Olympic Games. But he agreed. So that was in 87 was the first world championships. And, you know, I played in all the first world championships and won most of them, fortunately. So it was a lot of fun. And I was able then also to work with the FIVB to help put together this world tour and that would continue to grow. In 1992, Randy and I committed to Ruben Acosta to play in an event in Spain alongside the Olympic Games at that time to showcase beach volleyball for the IOC.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was the first problem for us with the AVP. The AVP said, no, you can't go. And we had committed 2 years in advance to go to this event because we knew how important it was. We saw what was happening worldwide. The AVP didn't care. And basically, I'll back up just a little bit.
Billy Berger in charge at this point?
No,
we're at 92, so is Jeff Dankworth?
Yes.
Okay.
And back up in 90, when Leonard was still involved,
yeah,
I introduced him to Ruben Acosta. They were having a discussion about building the sport together, the AVP and the FIVB.
Oh, my God. This is like an alternate universe kind of thing.
At that time, though, Ruben was looking to build the sport.
Yeah.
And he saw what Leonard had done in the United States. And, of course, the United States is an important country and everything else. So they were having very good, positive discussions about working together to build the sport. What happened after that?
Ruben.
The AVP
tosses Leonard.
Tosses Leonard. All discussions cease. With the FIVB, shortly after that, the AVP tries to put on events in other countries, AVP events only. They got their hands slapped, and it was a big problem from that point on. The FIVB looked at the AVP in a little different way. Where were we? Oh, so Randy and I committed to go to
Barcelona.
To Barcelona to play. It was just outside of Barcelona, but to play in this event to showcase the sport for the IOC. AVP says, no, you can't go. We said we committed to it. We're going to go. And of course, the decision was being made by the guys we beat every weekend and by this Jeff Dankworth who took over for Leonard Amato.
Yeah.
And so we ended up going. They fined us $70,000 for going.
$70,000. Each or total?
Total.
Still.
That was the amount of money.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah.
That was the amount of money that we could win if we went to that event. So let's fast forward.
My heart hurts right
let's
now.
Let's fast forward. So Ruben again used me to go with him to speak to IOC members, to lobby. He was friends with Juan Antonio Samaranch. I would spend a lot of time with Juan Antonio,
head of the IOC at the time.
And basically we were selling them on getting the sport into the Olympic Games, and after several meetings and other ways of getting the IOC involved and getting the Atlanta Organizing Committee involved, they agreed. FIVB built the stadium,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the things happened to make that happen because it was on a private piece of property and there had to be a switch and blah, blah, blah. But Ruben, was able to get the sport into the Olympic Games in 1996, and AVP played zero role in that. In fact, they did everything they could to make it more difficult. So sport became an Olympic sport in 1996, one of the first sports to sell out in the Olympic Games. Huge success from that time on. It's been a huge success in the subsequent Olympic Games.
Right.
How do we get on that? Okay.
Well, in 94, you decide to play FIVB alone. Without AVP, because you're not playing alone. Well, you're playing with Carl Henkel.
Okay. So
who strangely sent me an email today. Isn't that
weird? Oh, really? That's funny.
Since you're on the show, Carl Henkel emails me.
So in that period of time, already the AVP had basically pushed me out. They made my life very, very
difficult.
Did you
pay the fine?
No. We ended up suing them, and then they said, okay, we dropped the fine.
Okay.
So, but they kept me and Randy from playing in the biggest event of the season, that next weekend.
Ah, okay.
And that hurt a lot.
Event of AVP.
Yeah, and that was $100,000 prize money. So they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish in making it difficult for me and Randy. So the Olympic qualification starts the beginning of 1995.
Okay.
And the AVP is still saying, screw the FIVB. We're the best in the world. We don't need them. We don't care, And it was very short-sighted in my view.
Except the FIVB has the keys to the car, and the car is the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, to Ruben's credit, I mean, the U.S. was going to get one berth in the Olympic Games automatically, okay, as a host country.
Right.
But we had an opportunity based on the qualification system to get two more teams like every other country in the world, into the Olympic Games. But to do that, you had to finish in the top – you had to have one team in the top eight in the world ranking at the end of the qualification.
The FIVB ranking, right?
FIVB ranking.
Okay.
And a second in the top 24.
Okay.
Well, the AVP wouldn't let anyone go. Nobody. Zero. So I said – and this is just this happened just after Randy. I had retired, and then Randy said he wanted to play with somebody else, and then I came back. I had knee surgery. And so I said, well, I'm going to play in the Olympic qualification. And I started calling guys to play. Ricky Lutie said, yeah, I'll play in the Olympic qualification.
Yeah.
And I induced my first
child. Team UCLA.
Yeah. Yeah. I induced my first child on Sunday, the day before my plane flight, so I could see him be born. Hagen,
nice.
My son.
Nice.
And Ricky Lutie had already committed. I get home.
Kudos to the wife, by the way, for going along with that plan.
Yeah. Well, she knew she knew before we got married that I was kind of a volleyball guy. And my life revolved around the sport. And, yes, kudos for her. So, Ricky, I get a message when I get home from the hospital. I can't go. The AVP will not let me go to the Olympic qualification. And I'm going, Ricky, come on. So I figured, okay, all the AVP guys, this is a story I'm going to get from them. I started calling the four-man guys. I made a few calls. First one to return my call that morning was Carl. And I said, Carl, you know, there's the Olympic qualification. It starts this week. I'm getting on a plane. Explain the situation. I said, are you interested in coming with me and trying to qualify for the Olympics? He said, how much time do I have to make a decision? I go, oh, about 5 seconds. And he goes, okay, I'll go. So we ended up going. We started playing in the events to qualify for the Olympic Games. One other team from the U.S. went, Carlos Bersinio and Jeff Williams.
I did not know that.
No one knows this.
I didn't know that part.
Very, very important.
Yeah.
These are four-man guys who are good volleyball players,
yeah.
Beach volleyball players. And so they and us went through this whole process for a year and a half.
Wait, so there was one more team besides Jeff Williams and Carlos Bersinio?
No.
Okay,
they and
so
and
you
and
four
Carl,
guys,
yeah,
right.
Traveled around the world, played in all these events. We finished in the top 8. They finished in the top 24. U.S. not only gets an automatic berth, but they get the opportunity to send two more teams. Had we not played, had Bersinio and Williams not played, we would have had one team in the Olympic Games in 1996.
Jeez.
One team. Nobody knows that.
I didn't know that.
Nobody. So, you know, we did what we had to do, Williams and Bersinio, and then they had an Olympic qualifying event in the United States for those two other positions.
Who held that event? The FIVB or the USOC or USA Volleyball?
It was USA Volleyball in conjunction with the AVP.
Okay.
Because USA Volleyball had nothing to do with beach at that time.
Right, and no one wanted USA Volleyball to have anything to do with beach at that time.
Well, they didn't want anything to do with beach. You know,
mutual disgust?
Yeah.
Is that what was happening?
So it made sense that USOC had to play a role in this as well because it was an Olympic qualification event. So Karch and Steffes and Dodd and Whitmarsh were the top two teams that ended up going to the Olympic Games. And Randy actually played in that event with Adam Johnson.
Okay.
And Randy sprained his ankle warming up for one of the games.
Oh, man.
And they had a really good chance of going – qualifying. And,
yeah.
And this was one of my big peeves about the qualification process was, one event, you may not get your best teams.
We've talked about this on the show because the qualification argument of the last Olympics and perhaps the next Olympics, but there's the track and field and the swimming models, which get a lot of attention.
Yeah. Okay.
For promoting the sport.
Great. Fantastic. I'm just saying I never thought that it made sense to have a single event that would qualify, in a sport like ours, the teams. That's just my opinion. So Randy didn't go. Those guys went. We had three teams in the Olympic Games. Some may remember. Carl and I played against Karch and Kent in the semifinals.
Right. Rather contentious match.
Yeah, it was
fair to characterize it that way.
Super fun. Wrong outcome, but super fun. Carl was basically a rookie to the beach game. He was a great four-man player with a lot of support around him. He didn't have a lot of doubles experience. He came along very, very quickly, and we worked together to do that. And actually, Gene Selznick played a pretty big role in helping Carl become the player he was.
How old was Carl then? Late 20s?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Carl Henkel, good friends and teammates with my brother-in-law.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Carl, you know, once we get, you know, on the court against Kent and Karch, just rose to the occasion. And we controlled the whole match. It was 1-15 with the old scoring system. You know, he was blocking Karch, and we focused on Karch the whole game because I felt like I knew how he played the game and we would have success against him. And we did. And, you know, we led the whole game, and right at the end they turned it around and won. So, and we had an opportunity to get back into the medal rounds playing a team we had beat the first match in the tournament, Portugal. And I, you know, Carl had given everything in that match against Karch and Kent. And when it came to playing Portugal an hour later, he wasn't the same guy he was during that match or in the first match against Portugal. And I knew it. I saw it on his face right when that game ended with Karch. He went over and sat down and he did this, and I came over to him right away. I mean, seconds after the game, I go, Carl, you got to forget completely about that game because we have an opportunity to come back and get into the medal rounds. And
yeah.
I was confident we could beat any team in the Olympic Games, any team. And we just didn't have the same kind of game, and Portugal played incredibly well. They were on a little roll. They had beaten, you know, good teams just before that, and we lost. And then Karch and Kent got the gold, and Whit Marsh and Dodd got the silver. And Canada came out of nowhere to get the bronze.
Figure that one out.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Very interesting. All right, here's a question we've had here on the show before, and I think it has an obvious answer, but maybe a not-so-obvious answer. Has beach volleyball benefited from its presence in the Olympic Games? Was that the best move for beach volleyball was to be included in the Olympics?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank
Are you.
You
kidding?
Okay.
Are you kidding me? I mean, in 1996, again, the Atlanta Organizing Committee was very concerned because they're, I think, bottom line is the organizing committees for the Olympic Games, they're most concerned about money. They come
they want to make money.
They come into it, you know, behind, and they're trying to make up. And if they have to build a stadium and they don't know how many tickets they're going to sell and everything else, they were very, very leery. We actually, the FIVB flew Samaranch and Billy Payne, who was the president of the organizing committee at the time, to Brazil to watch the World Championships. And Ruben put me in charge of Billy Payne. And he said, you know, while he's here, you're with him the whole time. So we went and I showed him. I'd been to Brazil many, many times. I showed him around. We talked about the sport. We talked about everything. And they, you know, with the other dealings that Ruben had with the venue itself and making sure it wasn't a burden on the organizing committee, they agreed to have the Olympic Games, beach volleyball in the Olympic Games. So it took a lot of work to make it happen, but when it happened, one of the first sports to sell out. And that was the key. That was the key going forward. Is it? And, you know, I mean, the amount of television coverage they've gotten in all the Olympic Games has been phenomenal.
Fantastic excuse to sell sex in the Olympics.
Yeah.
But also male and female.
And it looks good on TV, though, too. Like,
it looks
the
like
the crowd is raging. Everybody's having a good time.
It does.
Still the first event to sell out.
It's way different than a lot of the other Olympic sports.
In Beijing, the women's medal match, gold medal match.
In the rain?
First time ever NBC goes an hour without commercials. Ever. Ever. I mean, is that a message
I mean,
for
that's a
sport?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And then,
well, okay, yeah. but to the non-obvious answer that I think there's some things there, it goes into the Olympic Games in 96.
Yep.
First time that the AVP goes out of business is 1998.
Uh-huh.
Misty and Carrie win in Beijing in 08. Phil and Todd win in Beijing in 08.
Mm-hmm.
The tour is gone by 10.
Yeah.
Why hasn't Olympic success, obvious Olympic success, I believe, I agree with everything you said, hasn't that translated? Why hasn't that translated into professional success in this country?
Okay, the first thing, in this country, you look at many, many countries around the world, and the success is phenomenal.
But they've lost events, and beach volleyball made money one time.
And new events.
The FIVB has been putting money into beach volleyball from other areas of revenue into the tour for 20-odd years.
Yeah.
They went even or made money, some money, like 2 years ago. Well, and I don't know if they have in the last couple, but I read an article that said that they made money on it finally. They've been putting it, and not to say it doesn't have ancillary benefits to the rest of their brand necessarily, but from a raw dollars perspective, it wasn't a money-making enterprise.
Well, I would beg to differ in all of that information.
Great.
Okay. Initially, Ruben Acosta invested, for sure. He saw the value. He got the sport into the Olympic Games. He invested in it. Once Swatch came on board as the tour sponsor, very early on, you could argue that the FIVB was making money.
Okay.
Okay. And particularly in the last years of the Swatch contract, there was definitely in other ways that they were making money with the fees from the promoters and so on and so forth. There were ways they could have made even more money by not doing the things that they do to help really promote the sport and paying the money they pay to the promoters and the television and everything else. But yes, they were making money for a handful of years for sure while under the Swatch contract.
Okay.
Okay. Again, way more information than I think the general public needs to know or wants to know.
We talk to volleyball people, not the general public.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Swatch people wanted to continue. This is recently. Yeah.
Last year.
When Ari Grasso came on board as the new president of the FIVB, which I think was the right choice for the organization because of his business background, his success with the sport in Brazil, his general overall demeanor. He makes a very good president as far as I'm concerned. But things change just before he became president and after in the marketing area. And there was a deal signed to change how the marketing is done, and I won't get into details, but that didn't allow Swatch to continue, and they haven't replaced Swatch.
Okay.
So now
that has to leave a pretty sizable hole.
Now they're back to investing money. They believe, though, and the marketing people believe that there's a big upside, you know, based on how successful the sport has been worldwide with the World Tour, the various countries putting on events, and the television that goes all the way around the world for those events.
Okay, how about in this country?
This country now. Why do we not have success? Here's your question. Why is there not extreme success in this country based on the fact that the Olympic Games have been so successful and the American players have been the highlighted teams in those games?
Absolutely.
There's several answers, I'm sure of it. One is, the success in the other countries is different than what's going on here because the cities in those countries are the biggest sponsors of events. They put in the
things like Klagenfurt.
Yeah, they put in the money. They support the events. You come to the U.S., it's reversed. You're paying the cities all that money to have an event. And that's the biggest expense, basically, of putting on an event. So extremely difficult to put on an event at the level of a Grand Slam in our country. Okay, so having those events is very difficult. Leonard's doing it. He figured out a way to do it. He's going to have success. Hopefully, he continues to do it. Why doesn't the national sport? Why don't they have success based on what's going on worldwide and all the covers that the Olympics had on NBC in our country? It takes a special person to sell the sport in this country based on how difficult it is. We have a lot of competition with all the other sports. And the only one that has had success doing it, the only one, is Leonard.
Right.
And he's a little bit soured about putting on a tour. He's had problems a couple times. Even though he's had a tremendous amount of success doing it, more success than anyone else trying to put on a tour with beach volleyball in this country, he is not thrilled about doing it again. Okay. But he saw this opportunity to put on an incredible event that got NBC interested and got, you know, the other sponsors he's attracted very interested. So now he has a new kind of formula that he came up with. I helped him a little bit, but it was his idea. But he's the only one in this country that's been able to bring the kind of dollars to the sport that are necessary to make it successful. There isn't anyone else that's proven that they can do that. And because, and again, you go back, because of what's happened in the past, he's not that excited about doing it again.
So unless somebody else steps up, or you know, that's able to bring in millions of dollars in resources to put on a tour, we're going to have a very, very hard time building a tour up again and getting the sport where we think it should be based on the success it has internationally and in the Olympic Games. And a part of that component of being able to attract a promoter and sponsors and television is the sport itself. And this, I'm kind of going into a different area here. And,
keep flowing.
And to me, the biggest thing outside of everything else is the players, are the players. If the players can't come together as a group and support the sport in the proper way, it'll be fractionalized and there will be factions, and it'll be very difficult to get anyone to support the sport. It seemed to me, we were all on the same page with Leonard. We realized he was the brains behind the operation. We weren't stupid enough to think that we could do this. But we knew he could do it, and he proved to us he could do it. Now the players are not all on the same page. So, and that's what the AVP is trying to do now, is to buy the players, basically, and get them on the same page. They can't buy everybody, though.
Who needs to change? Is it the top-level players? Is it the mid-level players?
Is it
the top guys?
Uh-huh.
They need to make some different choices.
Well, they all can't think that the sport is all about them. They have to realize our sport isn't, you know.
This is a common reoccurring theme in this sport, is
exactly
it not?
Exactly right. Exactly.
Each collapse is the players being put in charge?
Uh-huh. It seems like it. I don't know. Take a look at history.
Hey, I've said for a long time, players play, and players are really good at two things.
Yeah.
Playing their sport and complaining.
Yeah.
They're not good at doing anything.
Yeah.
They play their sport. That's all they know how to do. They don't know how to do anything. They know how to tell you suck at it.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to do it.
Fix it.
But you said it on the show before. When you were a player, you complained like that, and then when you saw the other side of it after you were done playing.
Well, of course. The problem was, I had the answers.
Yeah. So they see it from the player side, which is understandable because that's all they know at the moment.
My thing is, I see a lot of players in their late 20s, early 30s who sound like me at 23. I had all the answers. If you wanted to run a successful professional tour, get the national team gymnasiums packed, and make international volleyball a big deal, come to me.
You knew all the answers.
I knew all. Turns out, I didn't have the answers. But I keep hearing this theme, and I've heard it about the initial collapse in the middle 90s, that the players all of a sudden were in charge and making decisions that the players thought they should be making, when really you should have business people making those decisions.
Yeah.
And now, again, we see players pushing to dictate more policy to whoever it is, the AVP, the FIVB, or the USOC or USA Volleyball. And again, I am left very concerned for what's going to happen, because you cannot put these people with their limited experience in life and virtually zero experience in business in charge.
Yeah. And yes, and the players made a lot of decisions, including bringing in the people that they wanted to run the organization, but ultimately they had control over those people. They weren't capable of doing it, the people that they brought in. They didn't have what it took to revive, you know, build the sport back up, bring it to a level that we all expect it could be at. But again, going back to the players, the top players all thought that they were the answer individually.
Yeah.
It's kind of my opinion based on what I saw and what I heard.
You have a little experience, though,
yeah,
to base your opinion on.
Yeah, and I was smart enough to realize I didn't know everything. I knew I could contribute, but there were ways I could contribute as a player and even helping market and promote and everything else, and I did everything I could and was pretty good at it. But I knew I wasn't the guy. We needed the guy. And the players today, I believe, still think they're looking after themselves individually.
Yeah.
And aren't willing to get together as a group, give up trying to own the sport themselves, hand it over to somebody who understands business, understands marketing, understands promotion, but understands it for volleyball, because it's different for volleyball than other sports, beach volleyball. And again, you just look at history. Who is the one individual that's been able to do that over the history of the professional side of our sport? And that's been Leonard Amano. And
you know, if you think he made too much money or you think he was kind of hard or this or that and the other, go back and look. What do you want? What, do you want to have success? Do you want to have an opportunity, a platform to play, to make money, to get sponsorship dollars, everything else? Well, then find the right person who can do it. I'm not selling Leonard Armato because he doesn't want to do it. He does not want to be put in the position of you know, trying to do something for this group of players and then getting screwed. Again, that's my opinion. But, you know, he may tell you something a little bit different, but that's just my opinion based on what I know from him and what I know from the sport throughout all those years.
From what I have limited information, but it's always seen that Leonard takes care of Leonard.
Yeah.
He does a good job of taking care of himself in whatever the situation is.
Uh-huh.
But, to your point, no one else has been able to sell the sport and produce the kind of revenue and opportunity for the sport that he has over and over again.
Uh-huh.
So
if you had...
You have to take one with the other.
If you were looking at hiring somebody to run your company and you knew you were going to have to pay a lot of money to this one guy, but you knew you were going to have success versus... You know, maybe this guy might have success. Maybe it's got to be cheaper, though. What do you do?
Well, companies make this mistake all the time.
Yeah.
They want to save money,
yep.
but they want quality employees who are loyal and,
yep.
and put out their best.
Yep.
Well, if you want that, you had best pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, even back to the first time when Leonard said he wanted to own part of the organization, my feeling was awesome, but we want to make sure that you stay with the organization. We don't want you to own it and just collect. We want you to continue to work and build like you've been doing from day one. And he was totally good with that. But the players thought that, God, look at where the sport is. It's so great. It can never end. It'll just keep growing. We can get more money. We can pay ourselves more. The sponsors are, they're guaranteed. Well, nothing's guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed. And it's been proven over and over and over again. It's just like an athlete thinking they can play forever. You know, as an athlete, you're making money. Any sport.
Yeah.
You're making money, good money, so you spend your money based on what you're making. But if you don't look at the future, at some point, and it could be tomorrow, your career could end. And now, what do you got going forward? If you don't make plans for the future as an athlete, just like the sport, then you're going to be in trouble. And we didn't do that. There were certain groups that didn't do that with our sport. They just thought, it's automatic. It's here. It's going to continue to grow. No problem. And whoop, there's a problem.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
What's the solution now? What's the ideal role
today?
Forward for beach volleyball? If beach volleyball is going to become a commercial success again in this country, what are the one or two things that you think have to happen?
Well, I think the players have to come together as a group and they have to be on the same page.
So a union?
Yeah, a union of some sort, yes. Somebody has to give them quality information about how to make decisions as well as a group. I don't think there's one player out there that has the answers. Maybe they think they do, and I'm pretty sure
that's the problem.
Pretty sure some of them think they do.
Yeah.
But it usually revolves around them and what's in it for them personally. You know, if players get jealous when somebody else has success, so they're going, I want part of that. I want part. Well, if any player has success, it's going to trickle down to everybody else. If Kerry Walsh Jennings
hyphen
gets on television
on the Today Show 65 times
and if there's a second seeded team, third seeded team, fourth seeded team goes, oh damn her, how could she, oh why can't I get that, I want that, why don't I get that, this, that, and the other, they don't realize they're benefiting from that.
Right.
She's exposing the sport to more people, to more sponsors, to more mm-hmm. television, and she's a great representative for the sport. I mean, she communicates very, very well. She looks the part. She's a tremendous athlete. I mean, all the players should be applauding her and encouraging her to do more and more and more to expose how great this sport is, because that's what she does.
yeah, she's getting a lot of attention, but there isn't many other people in our sport that can do what she does. Take advantage of her. Help her. Promote her to do all that stuff because it's going to benefit everybody else.
It's like Tiger Woods in golf. He's good for the sport. Everybody else is making more money.
He's the only reason golf is around.
And are there not people that are completely jealous of that?
100%.
Yeah, but somehow, some way, they're holding it together as a group, and somebody's doing the right thing to encourage Tiger and to promote Tiger, at least in the past.
Yeah.
Does Carrie need to be held to that same standard, though, where she needs to support policies that don't necessarily benefit her pocketbook and in some cases would go entirely against her pocketbook, and has she done that?
Well, let's just say she didn't. Let's just say she did everything that just benefited her. Everyone would still benefit. She's raising the platform for everybody else because not everybody can afford Carrie. They may be able to afford the second seat or the third or the fourth or the fifth.
Right.
All different levels of sponsorships will be available when they see this gal, in the public eye. Everyone else is going to want to play off what she is, and not everyone can afford her. So everybody down the line will benefit at some level. So now if she's of a certain personality and with smart enough to understand and willing to promote the sport in general, I mean outside of what she does just for herself, which is fine, absolutely fine, everyone will benefit, then she can really create a big, big benefit for the sport in promoting the sport generally for everybody. And she's been doing that, by the way. She's been doing that for this World Series event coming up in Long Beach. And I think she does a pretty good job of it generally on her own without anyone telling her to do it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
Got a couple questions on the face on our chat board. We always go back. You hear it on here like, oh, side out scoring, rally scoring, what's better, blah, 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 blah. You played both, obviously. I'm not going to get into like what's better, this or that, but what do you think? Maybe which one's better for the sport, I guess.
Well, first, I'll answer it that will appease, I think, some of the people that are asking the question. And my answer to the people asking and wanting and loving or liking playing the old scoring system is go ahead, continue to play it, enjoy it. You could, most of the people up and down the coast and all around the country, when they play, they can decide on any rules they want to play in. If you're going to play in the highest level event, I mean, it's just a very, very small percentage of people, then you're going to end up playing the rules generally that the FIVB puts forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the FIVB made a decision to go to the fast scoring or the, you know, because the big reason for beach volleyball was you could not get the game to fit into a certain time frame.
Mm-hmm.
For our sport to grow worldwide, we needed to be able to televise it. And they weren't willing. Our sport just isn't big enough, and it's not enough people are on board, but we had to make it interesting for the general public within a certain time frame. And that's why they went to the new scoring system.
Yep.
Again, if you don't like it, if people playing, on the weekends or during the – play the old. There's no problem.
Yep.
The same for the court size. I mean, there was a decision to make the court smaller because they thought – and I played a pretty big role in this – that because I played on the big court.
Mm-hmm.
I made a living for a lot of years of putting the ball away on the big court. And I had a lot of success at that. But I realized that – it wasn't interesting for the general public and the new fans of the game to see side out, 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 with no digs, no defensive plays. If we made the court smaller, it was inevitable that there were going to be more digs. So that's why they made that change.
Of course.
The FIVB and then in the United States they follow the rest of the world follow. But if you like playing on the big court, nobody can stop you from doing that. Go ahead. Go for it. Play. Enjoy the game the way that I played it for most of my career. It's no problem.
It's exhausting playing on that big court, playing twos.
Well, and remember, at the highest level, the guys that can really jump serve, they could win a game based on jump serves. And they would score half their points on jump serves. And really wasn't that interesting for the general public. You were saying?
No, I just Brian Lewis.
Yeah.
Just go back and rip
one of those guys who was ripping jump serves back in the day.
Loyal and Emmanuel, the team that comes to mind, because they were both fantastic jump servers on the 30x30, 30x60 court. They could rip their serves where they wanted, and they would win games based on serving alone. And I didn't think that was that exciting, and I also thought that – and I played the shorter court later on in my career. I was able to touch more balls.
Of course.
To get more balls up. Television and a big reason why we started to try to figure out how we could make the game more interesting, the best promoter in the game worldwide was the guy from Klagenfurt. And he said, I love your sport. He had the biggest event. He had the most successful event. He said, I love this sport. Television loves the sport, but only when there's action. And there's just not enough action. We're going to go away from the sport and do something different. And I said, don't go away. Let us try and figure out how we can make the sport more interesting to the public. Mm-hmm. See if we can create more defense. And I came up with two different ideas for the FIVB, one, the higher net, and two, the shorter court. And I proposed both of them to do together to really make a dramatic change. And at the time, Ruben Acosta, the president of the FIVB, said, it's too much to change at once. Pick one. I said, okay, the court.
Yep.
He goes, okay, boom, we're going to change the court size. He realized he was, you know, clever enough to understand that we needed more people to follow the sport. We needed the sport to be more interesting. And he saw how, you know, it could change the game if there was more defense.
Yep.
So that's how that came. Again, for the players that grew up playing on the big court, me one of them, if you want to play on the big court, go ahead.
Yep.
Go at it, you know?
You don't go down to the beach and somebody takes your lines and hands you a new set of smaller lines.
Right.
Generally,
you're bringing your own lines anyway in a lot of the beaches, you know, around the country. So you can put down anything you want.
We could put down a triangle. I want to play that.
Yeah, right.
No problem.
Did you train differently? Because I feel like a lot of players like the endurance part of it.
Oh, because of the scoring system.
Yeah.
Indoor, we trained the same for a long time, even though Doug said we were going to change. We didn't change. We did the same stupid stuff for 4 hours worth of volleyball, but it's really a much smaller game. Nowadays, they train much differently.
Gotcha.
Yeah, on the beach, the guys are training and doing what they think they need to do. Not only are the games shorter, but they're not required to play that many games in a day.
That's true.
The Olympic Games is the easiest tournament around.
God. Yeah,
is what the beach players
a day
say.
Every
other day.
If you get screwed, in an extreme situation, you might play two matches in a day.
Good Lord.
You know?
Man, could you imagine two in a day?
Oh, heavens. But, you remember.
Double his victories at this point.
You remember, we would play 8, 9, 10 hours in a day in a tournament. We'd play a 64 team or more
with weight belt
bracket in 2 days.
Yeah.
In 2 days, 64 team double elimination bracket. And we'd play 2 out of 3 to 11 in the winner's bracket. I mean, it was absolutely crazy. But that's what we did. And you know, the new kids that are playing today, the younger players, they don't know anything other than the quick scoring or the short court. And they don't complain. They don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing what they grew up learning how to do, and it's not a big deal for them.
We're going to take a short break here. We'll be right back with St. John Smith, who walked uphill both ways to the tournaments when he played them.
in the snow, but it was in the summertime.
In the snow.
I don't know how that worked.
Well, he was in Ohio there for a short stint. We'll be right back on the Net Live on a Monday.
On the glittery sands of Long Beach, California, the top beach volleyball players in the world will compete to be the true champions of the game. For the first time in a decade, these elite masters of the sand gather on U.S. soil for the ASICS World Series of Beach Volleyball. Step up your game in a week-long festival celebrating all things beach, including sports, music, culture, and community. As the professionals vie for $500,000 in prize money, fans will have the opportunity to compete in several open tournaments throughout the week. Sanctioned by the FIVB, the sport's international governing body, this Ultimate Beach Showdown takes place July 22nd to the 28th. Visit WSOBV.com for details. It's the ASICS World Series of Beach Volleyball.
90 seconds.
The tale of a boy with no love for his life. One hand in a ditch to the RCL tight. Beneath his potential, he need a rug. And the meanest of men, all the meanest of men.
60 seconds.
A little more Jane Collymore for you. Be sure to check her out if you're in the Seattle area. And maybe, just maybe, down here at the World Series of Beach Volleyball. Make sure you go to the World Series of Beach Volleyball, brought to you by ASICS. It's going to be an incredible event. And don't not only go, but what St. John Smith told you earlier. Go and play. Be a part of it. Play
four-man.
Play six-man.
10 seconds.
And ignore that, because sometimes we go a little long and Blog Talk Radio gets a little aggravated and they're going to say goodbye, but we're not going to say goodbye. You should still be able to hear us, and certainly you'll be able to hear us via podcast if you missed the very end of this program. So ignore the very nice British-sounding lady from Blog Talk Radio. We'll see if she kicks us off. See, we had 10 seconds. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I can still hear us, so we're fine.
Yeah, we're still recording.
Yeah, we're still recording, here. So it could be a bonus edition for people on the podcast.
Do you have any predictions for who wins this World Series of Beach Volleyball?
No, you know, it's our top teams against the world ranking top teams.
So us.
What?
Are you taking us or the world?
The interesting thing about big events, major events, one-off kind of special events, is it doesn't always end up being the way you think it would be on paper.
Yeah.
So, you know, for instance, Carrie's playing. And Carrie's starting, you know, she's just starting her comeback.
Took
right?
ninth in Stock.
Yeah, and she may not be in perfect condition when this event comes around, but because it's a very special event and there's a lot of hype around it, some people rise to the occasion.
She might go all Carl Henkel.
Some people fall under pressure because it's a special, all the eyes are on this one. You know, it's one thing to play throughout an event and, you know, you're playing each day in a couple matches a day and you get to the final and you've got all this gearing up towards this thing. Here's a one-off kind of match or couple matches and all the attention's on and just some people are better. And I mentioned this on the blog to the FIVB that in those, like the world championships, I you've got to really watch out for the veterans because they know what to do under special circumstances. They have the experience. Teams that don't have a lot of experience are just playing their normal game, but sometimes the normal game isn't enough, particularly with more people watching, bigger television, more pressure put on them from their national federations. It's just different. The feeling is different. There's more pressure. Some people rise to the occasion. So I would bet on Carrie because, you know, she's had enough experience for everyone else put together. She knows what it's like to play in a gold medal match and then, more importantly, win a gold medal match.
Or three of them.
Yeah. So you know, the most important thing for anyone playing is not to change their game when they get to the final. It's to continue to play. Don't let the extra pressure, you know, change your game. You've got to play like every point is the first point of the game, and you go for it. When you get to the end of the game, it happens to so many people, you don't blast your serve. You don't, you know, things change because it's at the end of the game. You haven't experienced that, so you just feel the pressure. But if you played like there was no pressure, you're going to play way better. And it's hard to do.
How much time are you spending with young athletes these days?
Tons. I run camps from San Diego to Santa Barbara all summer long and some of it year round. And I see kids from 7 years old to 14 years old, and then I have some elite camps for the older high school kids.
So I see kids all the time. And, what people don't understand, this is true for any sport for kids. You know, we can make, you know, at the younger levels, you're just giving them the skills and they're developing, they're growing, everything. You can see that there's some talent in some kids and you're not sure about others. You can never know, actually, until they get older if they're going to be. I told you the Pat Powers story, I think, and I'll tell you again, but I want to finish this story.
Our listeners probably haven't heard the Pat Powers story.
You have 100 kids. You line them up. And they're all different kinds of kids. And you know how parents are. They think their kid's the one.
Yes.
And they're going to do everything
especially
they can.
Baseball parents.
Yeah, exactly. So you line them all up. You give them all the exact same coaching. Right? Exact same coaching. You know, some kids are going to end up at the top. Some kids are going to end up at the bottom. And you could take that kid at the top. Don't give him any training at all. He comes to the sport, she comes to the sport, a year later, 2 years later, they're still going to rise to the top.
Right.
Because they have the mental, they have the physical.
This is the argument against youth sports.
It doesn't happen all at the same time for all kids. But you got to realize that you may want your kid to be the best, and they will improve, and any help they get along the way is going to help them improve. But you cannot take them just because you want them to be the best and make them the best. They have to have something else going on, and that's something God-given. You're given from your parents when you're born. And you know, I mean, that's the bottom line. You can always make the kid better, but you can't make them the best. The kids that are going to be the best are going to be the best. It's going to happen some way, somehow, you know. And again, it happens at different times. Pat Powers. I saw Pat Powers in high school playing. For those of you who don't know who Pat Powers is, I'll get to that point, but playing in high school, it was comical to watch him play because he was all arms and legs. We've all seen those kids that are all arms and legs and not everything's together yet. He would go up to try and spike the ball. Sometimes he'd spike the ball on his own side of the net. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. But he was this tall, gangly kid. And you, if you had to bet, was he going to be something special, you'd say, no chance in the world. No chance in the world. Well, Pat loved the sport. He continued to play and develop. He ended up going to SC. By the time he was a senior at USC, he was the best outside hitter in the country. It took him, you know, throughout college to get to that point.
Yeah.
4 years later, the 1984, best outside hitter in the world.
Opposite.
Outside hitter.
I thought he played opposite.
I remember distinctively him hitting on the left side, but he may be.
Well,
you know, I can see him.
Because Burzes and Karai are on the left.
You're right. He did play on the right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, either way, he's an attacker, best in the world.
Yeah. Unstoppable.
Yeah. And again, you look at him in high school or before, you would not have bet any money on him to be a special kind of a player. So, you know, parents have to remember that, too. I mean, you can't give up on a kid when they're, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old because they don't have it all together at that point.
Yeah.
You know, if they love the sport, give them the opportunity to continue to develop. But don't kill them. They got to love it. It's not going to happen if they don't love it.
Yeah, kids are always so different. When you're a parent, you have a couple of them, you realize how different they are. What are the differences in your three?
Oh, Hagen, my oldest, is a really good athlete. Probably could have played, you know, three or four different sports. And he actually, I was encouraging to play tennis, you know, when he was very young, and he was very good. And his buddies started playing volleyball, and he goes, yeah, can I play with my buddies? And I go, yeah, sure you can, you know, as long as you keep playing tennis.
Crazy tennis dad, St. John Smith.
Yeah, well, the tennis thing faded away, and more of his friends play volleyball, so now, you know, he continued to play volleyball. And he, like I said, he got recruited as a libero. He's 6'1". He may end up at 6'2", but
Taylor
he's not,
Crabb, next Taylor Crabb.
Maybe. But he can do everything. He can do anything. And more importantly, and I saw this early on with him, he had the right head for the game.
Yeah.
He was very focused. You know, he loved the game, but he was very focused, and he knew how to do things and get the rest of his teammates to do things and keep them together. So he's a special kind of a talent, I think. My next kid is Pat Powers, the young Pat Powers. Stanton's 16. He's all arms and legs.
Yeah.
He absolutely loves the sport. But he, not everything is together yet. And I see things every day from him, and it blows me away. He, the way he moves, his quickness, even though he's kind of the gangly guy, he's so light on his feet. It's incredible. So I'm just waiting for the time when things catch up to see where, you know, the kind of
when he figures out where his hand is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that. I grew quite quickly. I was like, well, my hand is over there. It used to be here.
And my youngest, the 13-year-old little Singe, he can kind of do anything. But he's built like I was, little chubby as a 13-year-old. But he's just starting to grow and change. So, you know, when they're that age, it's so fun to see them change because they change so quickly.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't need to put any undue pressure on them. Like I said, you take all these kids, you line them up, some are automatically going to rise to the top, and the others will end up where they're supposed to be.
Did they not want to play volleyball at some point?
No.
They just decided?
They didn't have to play. In other words, Stanton just started playing club 2 years ago. Hagen started playing when he was 14. And most kids that he knew were starting before that, but I held him out. I said, I just don't, it's not necessary. I had the camps going on when they were younger, so they were down at the camp. They were touching the ball. They developed the skills, which is the most important thing at a young age, is develop the skills. And then if they want to go on and they want to play and they want to compete, then they'll be ahead of most everybody else because they've developed the skills. So, yeah, that's what they did. They played. They waited a little bit longer, and then they got involved. And Hagen, it's, you know, he's on his way.
Awesome.
Had my oldest tell me that he wasn't into volleyball. I'm not like you, Dad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, I wasn't aware you were supposed to be. And then a couple months later, he's wanting to pepper out in the front yard, just out of the blue. That's strange, isn't it, buddy?
And so much of it has to do with, you know, what happens at home around, you know, if the ball is in the house, they're going to touch the ball. If it's,
if it's
a hockey stick, you know, in the house with a, they're going to pick up the stick and start hitting the thing. Their environment will dictate a lot of what they do, but having, you know, seeing it, if you're around us, you see it more as children. So they saw it, they understood it. They're going to make the choice at some point whether they want to go that direction or they want to go another direction.
Right.
But so many parents want to force them to do certain things.
In every sport.
I force my kids to do all sports. That's what I did. And give them an opportunity to experience the different sports. And if sports was going to be their bag, they were going to end up choosing it. But we needed to encourage them a little bit.
Do you have a violinist or a trombonist?
No, and that bums me out because it's one thing I wish I would have done is, you know, in California with the way the weather is and all the sporting opportunities available, to take a kid and pull him inside to play
tough.
An instrument.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's a great thing.
So you get to college and the guy plays the guitar at a party and he's really popular.
Yeah, exactly right.
Kevin's been burnt on that before, I believe.
Yeah,
I tried to play, and I decided I could take the guitar apart and put it back together if you want, but I can't play the thing.
That's how you lost girls that way.
Hey, I'll tell you a story. Todd Schaefer, I don't know if you're familiar with who he is. He's Vince Scully's stepson, but he was a pretty good beach volleyball player. And we were at a tournament somewhere, you know, one of the AVP events at the time, and we're in the lobby of a hotel, and it just happened to be where everyone was kind of congregating. There was a piano kind of off to the side, and he goes back, and he starts just dialing in this stuff.
Tickling the ivories.
Classical stuff. And in the beginning, everybody heard it, didn't know what it was. And then everybody gravitated over to where he was, and he just went off. And
that's
he had
cool.
a hidden talent nobody knew about, and it was exciting. I mean, for us and for me to hear it, but imagine the girls. I mean, they were crazy. But it was a very, very cool thing. And having you know, that kind of a talent and musical background is I think, awesome for children. Because you don't know. They that may be their bag.
Right.
But unless they're exposed to it, they may never know.
It's a new business, Southern California. Outdoor music lessons.
There you go.
Yeah. You're welcome, whoever does that.
They're trying to kick the personal trainers out of the parks. How about some violinists?
There you go.
Yeah.
Kick my trombone right out of the park,
exactly.
Huh? Yeah. Well, Sinjin, we certainly appreciate you coming down and spending the time here.
No doubt.
I know you're a busy guy involved in, among other things, being an author, father, movie and commercial acting, Hanu Sandals. Am I saying that right?
Honu.
Honu.
Yeah, some people say Honu. And the other thing I'm pretty excited about is I'm working with a company called Be the Beast, and they help kids get into college, you know, get scholarships and play some around the country for girls and boys for volleyball. So I'm that's a very, very cool thing.
Where should folks go to check that out?
BeTheBeast.com.
BeTheBeast.com.
And it's really neat working with kids from all over the country and helping them. Because you don't know yet, but at some point you're going to be thinking about college for your kids. And
right.
If they're athletes,
soon.
Particularly.
He's 11.
And you're thinking, oh, God, what's out there and what's available? And it's hard to know everything. Even the coaches of clubs don't know all the opportunities out there available for the kids. They have relationships, the clubs, with certain coaches for certain teams, but there's so many more. The kids that aren't going to get the full ride to a school, it's very, very important to know that they can get into a school, and for their parents too.
Yeah.
And a lot of times volleyball is a vehicle just to get them in. And there's other ways for them to get money from the schools without being an athletic scholarship. And we provide all that information and talk directly to the coaches and find the schools, narrow them down to the right schools for them based on what they want, a big school, small school, religious, West Coast, East Coast. And we narrow it down for them and find the school that's right for them.
And forget that admissions is just a big deal. Forget the scholarship fight, but just getting into school these days is a big problem.
Ridiculous. But then even the next step is when you come in as an athlete, usually you get preferential treatment for picking your courses, which doesn't happen as a freshman for people get into school. But there's so many benefits. Getting in being the biggest.
All right, BeTheBeast.com. Check that out, as well as checking out some other things we've talked about today. Spiker. No, don't check that out. Don't go look that up. Don't bother. I could send you a DVD if you need one.
Yeah.
I've got extras. We want to make sure we say congratulations to Gibb and Patterson. Third place.
Bronze.
Stad.
Yep.
Third place. Congratulations.
Pretty amazing. Patterson steps onto the international scene and does as well as he's done. That's incredible.
I said at the beginning of the season, we were talking about the teams. I was like, oh, they'll have some up and downs because they're a new team. They're learning each other. And all of a sudden, they're just,
it's
great for them.
And very cool. And I know you're trying to wrap it up, but I just have to say something about Casey. We talk about why a sport is successful, and it's a lot to do with the personality of the players. Casey is the guy. He is so cool, and he has a personality. He's not afraid to show it to everybody, and he's a really nice guy on top of it. So he's a very interesting and great player to watch, very talented and fun to watch.
It was a bronze sort of week, too, because the U19 Beach Tournament went on, and Sarah Hughes and Kelly Clace, I think, and TJ DeFalco and Lucas Yoder, an unusual yet familiar name right there. Bob Yoder, is that Luke? Is that his son there?
I think
seems like you wouldn't have another Yoder playing volleyball.
There's a bunch of Yoders playing that are really, really good. I think Lucas is Bob's son.
So they both took third place at those events. Congratulations to them. And also the junior national team was named recently. This was back in June, and they will actually be in action coming up. They will be playing there right now in Costa Rica. They're playing right now through the 20th, and then they'll be back going to Turkey at the end of August, beginning of September. Mike Christensen out of USC on that team. Ben Patch out of Brigham Young. Matt West from Pepperdine. DJ White out of Harvard is on that team. Some of the names that you've heard about on our show throughout the last season, along with Pete Hansen, Jonah Carson, and Jay Hossick. Coaching. So Jay out of town currently.
Friend of the show.
Although he did post when we said we had a legend of the sport coming on to co-host. He said, well, guys, I'm not really a legend.
Yeah.
Which is nice of you to say. So thanks so much for sitting in, Sijin.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. Finally, you asked me.
Yeah, Kevin.
Well, now we're going to ask you again. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, see what your answer is for next Monday.
Don't forget the ASICS Beach Volleyball Tournament, World Series of Beach Volleyball coming up, and it is a whole week event that's the 22nd through the 28th of July down in Long Beach. It is how expensive?
Free, baby, free.
$0.
But sign up to play in the four-man, six-man collegiate and youth. It's available before it fills up. Get on their website, WSOBV.com, and sign up.
And I think some of the finals of those events are on stadium court as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The four and six finals will be on stadium court.
I'll be there.
It'll be incredible. And DJ Roger will be calling the game from the stage.
Exactly. just heckling people.
Chris McGee will be there, and all kinds of other folks will be there getting some interviews and stuff, having
yep.
a good time. Who knows? Maybe I'll be playing libero for somebody.
Awesome. Sitting.
Glad to see.
On the sitting team.
All right, I'm Kevin. He's Jeremy. And the other guy's Christopher. We'll see you next time here on the Net Live.
On the glittery sands of Long Beach, California, the top beach volleyball players in the world will compete to be the true champions of the game. For the first time in a decade, these elite masters of the sand gather on U.S. soil for the ASICS World Series of Beach Volleyball. Step up your game in a week-long festival celebrating all things beach, including sports, music, culture, and community. As the professionals vie for $500,000 in prize money, fans will have the opportunity to compete in several open tournaments throughout the week. Sanctioned by the FIVB, the sport's international governing body, this Ultimate Beach Showdown takes place July 22nd to the 28th. Visit WSOBV.com for details. It's the ASICS World Series of Beach Volleyball.